Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yo, what's up? Welcome back to the show. This is David Scales for the Surf Splendor Network. Today, I'm bringing you an episode of The Grit with Chas Smith for September 11th, 2017. This episode is gargantuan. This is officially the longest episode of any Surf Splendor show that I've ever recorded, verging on 3 hours. We asked what length you guys wanted the episodes, and you said no limit. Longer is better. So here you go. It was fueled by alcohol. We got out of hand, and that's all I've got to say. So the end of the episode is way better than the beginning if you can persevere the first 90 minutes or so. All right, everything that we discuss is on surfsplendorpodcast.com. The videos, the links to articles, imagery, and then, of course, there's a comment section where you can engage, and then Chas will post this episode on beachgrit.com as well. As well as a lot of his other writings and articles, and then of course on social media, I'm at Surf Splendor, and then Chas is at Reports from Hell, and engage in the ongoing conversations there as well. That's a great way to kind of continue whatever we discuss in this show, continue it there on social media. And of course, we will then follow up again in the next episode with whatever you guys chime in on. I make notes throughout the course of the weeks, and then we just continue this ongoing conversation. You get it. You get the idea. I don't know why I'm over-explaining it. All right. Without further ado, enjoy today's show. I'll be back in 3 hours to sign us off. Thanks. Jesus Christ, girl. So yes, we can record you cracking a beer, but I also stocked up on coconut water and vodka.
Oh, if you would prefer. I'm totally going to do coconut vodka.
Okay, cool.
Then, yes.
I'm going to keep your beer.
Okay, perfect. You can totally keep it.
All right, we're cutting.
You and me are peoples.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers.
Are we cheersing with beer or coconut water?
We're cheersing coconut water first.
Okay, cheers.
Actually, we should probably, yeah, we're cheersing with that.
Mmm.
It's nice, isn't it?
Mmm.
Isn't it good?
It's my first sip ever.
It's good, huh?
So good.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Actually, it's better than coconut water is by itself.
It is, because sure. The vodka cuts the greasiness of coconut water.
It's good. So we're back from our quick little pause break, and we decided we're going to do beer. Let's cheers with beer.
We're going to, yeah.
Cheers. We're going to do beer first and then vodka cocoa.
Perfect.
And it's 1 o'clock. It's not even 1 o'clock.
No, we're
on
early.
Friday afternoon.
Yep. So it's plenty. We're past drinking hour.
All right. I was concerned that you had meetings that you would have to attend after this, and that you would not participate in drinking with me because I got nowhere to go.
Yeah. There's no such thing as not drinking.
But do you have meetings after this?
I did one, and I do have another one after this.
Awesome.
But showing up a little loose is never a bad thing.
Might be better sometimes.
Yeah. It's always better.
So I spent the whole morning in the kitchen prepping food. To
perfect.
Host my parents for dinner.
Perfect.
So, and that's all I've got to do from this point on.
It's just prep. So, what are you cooking tonight?
I was prepping, and then I got to start cooking. I'm doing, trying to really just relish these last few days of summer.
Yeah.
And so I'm going with a summer-inspired menu out on the grill.
Mediterranean?
No. I'm going grilled scallops.
Okay.
But with like a corn elote, which is like Mexican corn that you get on the stick with mayo, but like
the
doing it a little bit. Yeah. Doing a little bit different, not on the cob, obviously, and arugula, and then a salmon with cucumber, like smashed cucumber, dates, lemon, fennel.
How are you not scooped off the market yet? Being able to cook like that.
Yeah. Ladies, listen up, man. Yeah. I'll post photos to Instagram.
I mean, will you? Of the elote?
No, I won't. Actually, maybe to the story. Yeah. I can't have that exist on the proper feed.
No.
But maybe to the story.
Okay. That, I mean, I feel the people demand to see the elote.
See, because I asked you if it was okay in our Barrel or Nos segment at one point, if it was okay to post Instagram photos of food.
And I said no, right? Exactly. Yeah. And except for now that we've discussed it, I feel that this is part of the... This is not just a photo of food. This is part of a narrative, right?
It is. It is.
So, yeah.
Okay. Done. It'll be posted.
Good.
So, dude, we have so much to catch up on. So much has happened in the world of surf, and then so much has happened in the world of gossip.
Yeah.
Where do we begin?
Let's start with surf.
Okay. I'll tell you what. I've got one that dances a fine line between the two.
Okay.
Listener email.
Yeah.
Listener email from Bruce in Austin, Texas. He says, the entertaining sport of surfing needs more outsider analysis. It's a crime that there isn't more inside coverage of the WSL. Anytime there is something controversial, interesting, the WSL brushes it off and flat out doesn't speak of it. Don't you think the WSL should embrace sharks? Embrace the post-heat raging on the judges. Embrace contestants' potential disdain for one another. Don't you think somebody on the tour has to hate Gabriel Medina? We should know those stories. Beach Grit is the closest thing to surfing's TMZ, and it's done with integrity and wit. I would actually question both those statements.
I would too.
But surfing is a professional sport, and it should be filled with way more behind-the-scenes drama and controversy for the fans. We absolutely get bored to tears between contest windows. With that, I just want to say, keep up the great work on the show with Chaz. It's great. Get down and dirty, stir the pot, and keep us entertained. End quote.
Great.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I would love to see the WSL start mining those stories, you know, and not just about like stoking rivalries between the surfers, but just all of it. Like, why not, right?
I mean,
and I'm sure, again, I think we talked about it, if not last show, the show before, the number one watched sports video of the entire year was the McFanning shark attack, right?
Right.
So the fact that that's what's driving numbers, and I think the WSL did a pretty good job on that one of milking it.
Yeah.
But moving forward, I think they should have milked, and they should be milking it at Trestles also, right? Like,
yeah,
the breaching sharks and the and whatever. Has there been breaching sharks lately, or are they gone?
I don't know. Did you see Mark Healy's post this morning of a whale hitting a sea lion with its tail
out of the water,
so far out of the water, literally like 50 feet up, like insane.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So no, I haven't seen the breaching sharks, but I think to his point, the sharks are one thing. I think it's more interesting to hear
the rivalries,
sure. Dude, like the Felipe Toledo quote storming the judge's tower, sure, and they avoid it. They don't say why. They suspend him from Fiji. The commentators say that he got suspended from Fiji, but they never again say why it was.
No. And he even has to come out with an apology, right? Because he released an apology but what's it referencing? Nobody really knows. I mean, unless you know, you don't know what he's apologizing for. And nobody even knows. And again, we've talked about it here on the show, but I don't have any idea how much worse or different his storming the judge's tower was than Zeke Lau's, right?
Remember right.
When Zeke yeah. like, and from anecdotal evidence I've heard, Felipe went a lot bigger than Zeke did, but I don't know that. And how great would it be if you had, who's the Turley guy who does the follow cam?
Peter King.
Yeah, Peter King. If you had Peter King, like, following Felipe up to the judge's tower and recording it. Why? Right. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe the WSL is making a purposeful thing of not wanting to be pro wrestling.
Right.
But it seems like they do want to be part of MMA, especially, or like MMA. They just hired over somebody from the MMA, right? The content director guy?
Yeah, Joseph Carr,
I think is his name. Exactly.
I only know that because there's a winery called Joseph Carr Winery.
There's a winery called Charles Smith Winery, too.
I know, up in Washington.
Yeah.
They make good wines.
I one time emailed him a long time ago and said, hey, my name's Charles Smith, your name's Charles Smith, or somebody, could you send me some wine? And never heard back.
You would get along really well with him. He's kind of like this rock and roll personality.
Wasn't he in some band or something?
He was a roadie.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. So, Yeah, in the wine industry, everything is so austere.
Yeah.
You don't have to be that much of a rock and roller to be considered a rock and roller.
So you can be a roadie and be rock star of wine. That's amazing.
Exactly.
But back to the MMA part about serving. I still don't know what the WSL wants its like consumer-facing image to be, right?
Right.
Is it a sport? Is it a lifestyle? I think when Sophie Goldschmidt came on, she wrote something in her introductory newsletter. Sophie Goldschmidt is the new CEO of the WSL, wrote something about surfing being, you know, at the nexus between sport and lifestyle, and servicing them both is important. I think that's a lot easier said than done, because they could go way sporty, which is what it is now. And I wonder if you really go after the athletes' blow-ups and stuff like that, if you know, they feel that's too lifestyle. I love that stuff, right? You do. It's what we talk about.
Well, yes. And I think it only enriches their brand, whether they're the people that do it or not. It's important to be having the conversations around the brand. That's the question, though. Are they the ones who should be doing it?
No, I mean, I think what they should be doing, here, my two cents on this is, the WSL as the big tent should be farming out shows to, like, say, Beach Crit, right? Where we have a show that's under the WSL tent, where they don't like have any say on what goes down. But then we have access to their archives. You know, we can interview their surfers, all that kind of stuff. And to not going after anybody's wives or anything like that, but to reason, or to a reasonable extent, be able to discuss, like, you know, fun little gossipy stuff about the tour and about the personalities on tour.
That was my thought as well when I read that email, was like, they should just be inviting you and I to Trestles.
Sure.
To the Lowers event, and just be like, hey guys, here's the media pass.
Totally.
And if you do need access to the footage or anything like that, let us know and we'll get it to you. And then not give us any direction, but just allow us to be amongst it.
Yeah.
You know?
Pulling people over, asking questions. I think there's a big, obviously, trust issue with, you know, I think they feel they're protecting the brand at some level. But when you sit on the brand, it's equally damaging, I think, like when you let nothing out. But I feel that, I hope that moving forward, like, Beach Crit used to get busted all the time. We've been kicked off Facebook, literally kicked off for a week at a time, for reposting World Surf League videos that they had already put out. Like, in no context, right? I mean, we would put it up. It would be like a great Julian Wilson air or something. We would repost it. WSL would tattle to Facebook that we were breaching their copyright. Facebook would kick us off Facebook. And it would kill me. And I'm like, we didn't... All we were doing is bringing you eyeballs, right? Like, totally. We were reposting a video. We weren't saying whoever it was doing the air is a kook. We weren't saying anything negative about it. It was let's celebrate this thing. Now that doesn't happen anymore, which makes me feel like the WSL has... I think that was under the Paul Speaker regime.
It was.
That was really happening. Now I feel they've moved beyond that and realized that any publicity is good publicity. Like, anybody talking about this is good talk. And so maybe the bar or the pendulum will continue to swing to the, okay, let's let non-WSL sanctioned, but real surf personalities actually into the tent or into the world of, you know, and actually be able to do shows that we don't control, but we trust enough that these people are responsible, you know, and won't be like, you know, getting a lawsuit thrown at us by being totally ridiculous.
Right.
But the content would be different from what we would produce, but also fun from a WSL perspective.
Well, I think what they're going to have to recognize is that these conversations are happening anyways, and if they should actually, they'd actually be exercising a little bit more control by allowing us access into it rather than just having pure speculation from the outside.
Totally. I mean, I guess in one way, though, it's a bit of a hard nut, because I don't think the NBA or the NFL or NHL, I don't watch hockey much, but I don't think they do any real gossipy stuff. That gossipy stuff or whatever, behind-the-scenes stuff, is reserved for ESPN and, you know...
But they give ESPN access, right?
I mean, ESPN
right?
has huge access.
They have to, yeah.
Which I guess there is. The ESPN of WSL is the various surf media that's out there right now. And hopefully they will start... I think they will. I feel good about the WSL going to like start moving for toward just allowing different perspectives.
Well, the WSL sent out an email today, and the title of it was "The Job You've Always Wanted."
Oh yeah,
did you see this?
Oh, I posted that on that was Beach Crate yesterday.
Oh, was it really? Yeah. Oh, okay, sorry.
No,
I didn't check
but it's amazing. Did you read?
Did you read
the whole thing,
dude?
The ambassador of Stoke and Leisure.
I don't even understand what the job is. Are they trying to get somebody into the bleachers to cheer?
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. You ready for this? So as far as I can tell, I read it. Fairly confused, right? The job title is the ambassador of Stoke and Leisure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it'll be posted. I mean, it's on Beach Crit, so it can be linked. I just honestly reposted the whole thing.
Got it.
It seemed like a glorified kind of internship where you were going to get flown to Hawaii.
Yep.
You were going to. From all I can tell, it's you are going to be part of the WSL's Instagram feed. So you're going to be taking pictures of what you see as kind of this outside perspective, and then posting them to the WSL's Instagram feed during the 6 months of, North Shore.
3 months.
Three months of the North Shore time.
But it doesn't say anything about Instagram, and it doesn't say anything about photos.
It does. It says in the, when you get down, so you click through it.
Oh, I didn't click.
It's okay. Like your responsibilities are gramming. They call it gramming, right?
Oh, okay.
So your responsibilities are like being happy or something, gramming what you see. And there was one other thing, but gramming was the only thing you actually had to do.
Got it.
And then you got, I think the benefits or whatever were cash, being in Hawaii. So I'm assuming they're giving an intern a room in the WSL house to go.
Yeah.
Instagram. Right. So I thought this thing was worded really goofily. Obviously it was like really young, you know, and I thought, okay, this is silly and funny. It's so silly and funny that I don't even have to. It speaks for itself. So I just put it up on Beach Crit, except for I also threw it up on my gram on Instagram and got multiple young high schooly people saying, "This is awesome." How, dude, like, who didn't read really? Any sarcasm in what I had written or how it was posted, only thought, "This is amazing.
Oh,
please tell me how to sign up for this." And then that's when I realized WSL. Like, I tip my cap, you understand your demo way better. Like, I was just thought, okay, this is silly. But very clearly, based on the sample of my Instagram followers, young people were really, really excited about that opportunity.
It is hilarious.
They were honestly, to goodnessly, wanting to figure out how they could apply for the job.
That is so funny.
Yep.
Because even as I read it, I actually discredited the WSL because I was like, even if I wanted this job, I wouldn't apply for it because you guys didn't even explain what the job was.
No, of course.
And you made it sound so silly.
It's just silly and young. But
By design.
Yeah, it's silly and young, and getting a young person who, and it, again, like I felt after I got hit up enough times by young people who really thought it was like,
yeah,
I was somehow involved.
Sure.
I thought, well, shame on me for just being an old crappy man reading this, you know, young, fresh thing and just clowning on it.
Yeah.
They're going to get a free intern to Instagram for them, and that intern is going to be hyped.
You're right. Free intern. So that's the thing. Even though they're offering money, it's like anybody who would actually reply to that,
yeah,
is willing to do it for nothing.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know?
Well, I mean, it's a bit weird too, because any, like, you know, it's 6 weeks during December. December into January, right?
I mean it's kind of like
November.
It's November into January.
Yeah.
But yeah.
In any case, though, it's not a kid. It can't be a kid in school, in high school. So there, it's got to be, and it can't really be a kid in college. So I don't know who could take off time. So it's theoretically somebody. It's like a young working professional who doesn't have a job is what the target is.
Plenty of those.
Exactly. And again, to WSL's credit and to my discredit, those people, I guess, are a lot younger now than they were a few years ago. And I still think of people like, oh man, any like, you know, Generation X person would read this and just scoff at it because it's so positive and so,
right,
you know, whatever. But I had to, in that moment, recognize my own generational blinders, as it were. And yeah, credit the WSL for reaching beyond, yeah, the shallow kind of pool that I reach to.
It's a tough realization, man.
It's one that Derek Riley, my partner at Beach Crit, will never, ever
I have no idea how old he is. He will never acknowledge his age.
Really?
Yeah. He just doesn't talk about it. He believes that nostalgia about anything is basically the death knell. And so you never listen, if you're Derek, you never listen to old music. You're never nostalgic about one thing that happened to you before. You're only ever forward-looking. And I think there's a real point to living that way.
It's fascinating. If
you never want to age, if you want to be Michael Jackson.
Well, it's fascinating to me. And immediately it makes me judgmental of him. Like, you know, like, dude, just accept. But then also, I love somebody living with that much conviction.
Sure.
That's how, you know, David Koresh or whoever got people to drink Kool-Aid. It's just, there's enough people who just want somebody to follow who has a passion about something. And so I always love people who have that amount of passion, even though I wouldn't follow the same principle. However, it's inevitable, Derek.
Like, yeah.
You kind of, it's You're impossible gonna, to not age.
It's
you know?
True. It's true. But to Derek's point, I will say that people who get over, like, nostalgia is something that takes you over. The older you get, the more nostalgic you get, and then all of a sudden you're only talking about what was.
Sure.
At the same time, criticizing what is, which is, you know, more or less what I was doing with that WSL quote.
Totally.
Or post. I was reading those words in that way and thinking, this is straight up foolish. Where it would have behooved me at that moment to think, okay, this is, I mean, I had no idea that it would actually work. But again, from my very small pool of people who responded to me about it, it worked with their demo. Like, it really hyped people out.
That's
people
funny,
were
dude.
Wanted to be the ambassador of Stoke and Leisure.
Really interesting. I'm going to have to rethink or at least ponder Derek's philosophy on life.
Because
he's a smart guy, so like I know there's more packed into that than what I'm giving it credit for.
The part of it that I've taken on personally is that nostalgia, while great, like it's great to think back on stuff that you enjoyed when you were a kid. The more that takes over, the less room you have to look at what's actually coming. And you just, you basically, that's how age really takes over, I think.
Sure.
And by age, I don't mean in like getting, you know, physically less fit or whatever, like the natural things that happen. I think that in Derek's perspective, you can stop mentally aging in a way, right? As long as you keep looking forward and not looking back, you're going to just keep moving forward.
Mm.
Which there's some, especially I think for our ages too, that, you know, nostalgia is a real thing. Like, oh, it was better. I mean, I guess for every age, right?
Yeah.
You get to a point and you start getting dreamy about, oh man, you know, the surf industry back in the early 2000s was so much fun. I'm working on the Lisa Anderson documentary right now. And so I've been, you know, chewing through surf footage of the 80s. And I said out loud accidentally the other day, man, surfing was so much funner in the 80s. And of course it wasn't, right? I mean, it's as fun now as it was ever. It's just a lot easier to see, you know, Dayglow from 1988 and think, oh man, those guys were living the dream, whereas we're living in the apocalypse. But
and you see chicks on the beach and you're like,
sure.
Chicks were so hot in the 80s.
Totally.
And no.
Yeah, yeah, no.
It's just the novelty.
It completely.
Yeah.
And so again, yeah, the nostalgia, I will say, is a rotten fruit.
I would love to have a discussion with him about the music that he does listen to then.
Oh, I'll tell you. I mean, when Derek Riley rents a car and comes down to Cardiff by the Sea, it is XM radio is tuned to what's their big hip hop one?
I don't listen to XM.
It's whatever like this super progressive hip hop
modern
hip hop is what Derek listens to.
Man,
yeah,
there's just so much richness in history and in older music.
Nope,
crazy.
Derek, Derek don't care. He is listening to Lil Yachty, and I'm sure Lil Yachty's not even cool right now. He's listening to he's not on the cutting edge because it's XM radio. So, like, I listen to the music my 15-year-old stepdaughter listens to, right? And then I feel like, okay, whether I like it or not is immaterial. At least I'm getting an accurate picture of what 15-year-olds are listening to. Derek is not accurately listening to what 15-year-olds are listening to. He's listening to the XM package version of that, but it's still, you know, that's what it is. Whatever's
fascinating.
Whatever's on XM's hip hop station right now.
Man.
Yep.
So while I disagree with Derek's philosophy, I want to live my life with that much conviction.
Yeah. It's true. Conviction.
Yeah. Did you ever ride? We need to have a conversation about asymmetrical surfboards
again.
We still do. Did you ride that board?
Okay, so here's the thing. I've been meaning to post. My post in my mind on Beach Crit is asymmetry colon I'm in love with a monster. And I haven't. I've been waiting to post it because I've been waiting for a halfway decent day. It's been so crap down North County, but I think I'm in love with that board.
Really?
I think that it might have changed my entire world.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
that's huge.
It's been huge, to be honest. Again, I've had three waves that were like kind of surfable. I mean, I've, you know, but even so, I took it out the first day and it couldn't have been more than waist high and like really crappy. I had one little pump down the line that I thought, oh, like normally on waist high waves, you know, and it was, I think it was just dumping. But I had a little runner and I thought this feels good. And then I pulled into a backside, closeout, you know, a little mini barrel, and the way it gripped the face backside, I don't think I've ever felt that on a surfboard before. And so, and I've had this same rough experience on slightly better waves, but I'm waiting for one good wave to really give my full endorsement, because I don't know if it's, if I'm, there's, yeah, I mean, it's a, have you ridden one like that?
With that so, setup? Well, so I've ridden three different asymmetrical surfboards, two by Donald Brink, one by Matt Parker at Album, that he actually loaned me as well when we were having a similar discussion a couple of years ago. And but I've never ridden them in good waves.
Yeah.
And so I always have a question mark like you have, where it's like, ooh, this part felt good, but I really need a proper testing ground.
Why did you give it back before you got a good wave?
You know, I just didn't know what the appropriate amount of time to keep the board was.
What is an appropriate amount of time for a loaner?
I think a month would be the appropriate amount of time.
I think I feel like I've had that one now for what, 2 weeks?
Not quite 2 weeks.
There's absolutely no way I'm giving it back until I ride a proper wave.
Yeah.
I feel I'm doing him a disservice if I give it back before.
Because and if you're writing an article about it,
then that's I'm actually weighing in.
Okay.
And all of asymmetry lies in the balance here as far as I'm concerned.
Like, fair enough.
This is not just...
yourself a lot of credit.
Yeah, a lot of credit.
So I will say, though, what you said resonated... The few words that you said about those two waves resonated with me with the Album surfboard that I did borrow. It was matte black, short board. It was like 5'10", front traction pad, two traction pads. I mean, it's everything that we've talked about not doing, unless you're doing airs. But what resonated with me that you said is there was a sensitivity to it that felt remarkable, where it's kind of like I didn't get great waves on it, but the board did exactly what I wanted it to do when I wanted it to do it in a way that is not familiar to me. And so I'm like, well, is that just this board's a magic board, or is it the asymmetry that's applying that sensitivity?
So yesterday I surfed it and it was like peaky D Street, right? It wasn't great, but at least it was peaky. I caught a wave. I'm regular foot. Going right, I turned like I've never turned before. It just turned so easy. Right. Like I did a little bottom turn and went up and like cranked it all the way around without barely even trying. Yeah, and I had felt...
So maybe sensitivity is the right...
Totally, but it didn't feel squirrely at all, right?
No, like exactly.
It turned when I wanted it to. Like, I threw a little bit of muscle into it, and it gave me a lot more back than I put in. But then backside, though, it feels like it's sticky, right? It feels like usually backside, I'll goof around and just... Because it's easier to crank turns backside than frontside, so I'll just do, you know, stupid cranked out turns. And it wouldn't let me do that. But it did like grab the wave and allow me to, like, even in that dumb little closeout barrel that I pulled into, I was drawing a proper backside barrel line in the closeout, which I rarely do in a closeout. I'll always pull in and be like pulling out the back already, just because I'm, you know, that board like locked me in, and actually it was a proper. If it would have been a proper barrel, I would have come out.
So. I'm wondering if, remember, one of the things that Matt said specifically was placing the cluster of fins under, is it the cluster that's under the heel and the single that's under the toe, or vice versa?
It's the single's under the toe. And so I'm doing 20 turns theoretically on my toe and then really grabbing with the quad on the heel, which that's.
Or drive off the toe too. So if you're front side you're kind of getting that projection and drive. And then once you go to the turn, that's where the sensitivity
precisely
kicks in.
Yep. Which, again, Shitty Waves, you know, I think I've served it like 5 or 6 times now, though.
Okay.
But all Shitty Waves. But my big question marks coming out were, why is everyone not doing this?
But again, that's not really questioning the value of the board. That's more the answer lies in just the surf industry is notoriously slow to change. We're still riding polyurethane with wood stringers that we started riding in the 50s.
It's true.
You know what I mean?
Except I've been through like the epoxies. Like nothing else has felt quite right. Like epoxy was too light, right? I always thought
that
epoxy
wasn't
was too light.
Oh, no. That,
there's not an epoxy. Yeah.
You're right. That one's poly.
It
has its application, but it's not better than poly.
It's not better.
No.
You know, I've had
carbon wraps, stuff like that.
I love Biolus's carbon wrap. I have a Biolus carbon wrap that I adore.
Okay.
Like the Flex. Have you ridden a carbon wrap?
I have ridden carbon patches, but not Biolus's carbon wrap.
His wrap, the Flex on that thing is so dreamy fun. Like it feels really, really good. Like you can actually feel, I mean, you don't feel the Flex, but like it feels like it has spring to it.
What's your deal with Biolus? Do you get boards at discounted rate or what? I gotta get on that program.
I get you one. You want one?
Yeah.
I get team cost.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Team
hook
board?
It up, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy.
Because I bought a few of them 10 years ago, or maybe like late '90s or something, but I haven't ridden one since.
Yeah. His new stuff. I mean, like, you know, my favorite that he has is the Puddle Jumper, which is like, you know, not a performance surfboard at all, but it's it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun as except. Yeah, nothing. I have nothing bad to say, except the only thing I do have to say is the doors of perception are now open to me with this asymmetry, and I feel like I need to wander down this path just for a bit to see, because I think Matt said when we talked about it, it shouldn't feel tons different. I can't remember what exactly. It was something about it shouldn't feel radically different, and it doesn't feel radically different.
No.
But it did change my surfing, and I feel my surfing hasn't changed for a decade, right?
Wow.
Like I surf more or less, you know, the same way that I have for the last 10 years. On this one, and again, that's why I'm waiting for a good wave, because I felt I would do different things. I would draw different lines. I would do different turns. And that was exciting.
Yeah.
And also
fascinating.
The thrill you get out of people commenting on the fin setup on that board. It's so different that every time I got out of the water, I would have at least 3 or 4 comments, you know, walking up the stairs of like, oh, so was that on purpose or sick? Or
Were they making fun though?
No, people were fascinated. I don't know. It's maybe just a North County thing. I don't know if you took a board like that out at Trestles if people would just scoff at you. But in North County, I feel that there's an appetite for progressive design. People seem like they were intrigued by what it did.
Yeah.
Especially in the fin. I don't think people care as much about the asymmetry as they do about the fin placement.
Well, one thing that I feel like got completely overlooked was about a week ago, obviously the video came out with Jerry Lopez surfing Kelly's Surf Ranch.
Yep.
Because they switched that wave to a left. And Jerry was riding an asymmetrical board.
Totally.
Rad was that?
It was totally. But again, now, I don't know why you wouldn't, especially on a wave like Kelly's wave, where it seems like if you know what you're going to do and you really know how the wave is, why wouldn't you shape a board that would be for that wave, which would be an asymmetrical board?
Right.
I mean, there'd be no reason not to ride an asymmetrical board there.
Yeah.
Like, or I can't think of
one. No, I can't think of one either.
Because you know it's going to happen every
single
time. You can put the exact foam you want in the exact place you want.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I wonder. If wave pool boards are going to be drastically different. Did you look at the clip of Bethany Hamilton just came out of her riding it? Did you notice her board?
No.
Look at her board that she's riding. It's bizarre looking. It's super fat and flat, it looks. Which, of course, you know, it's fresh water, so you're going to need more foam to float you and all that stuff. But I just wonder if eventually the boards that are used at wave pools are not even going to resemble surfboards.
Yeah.
You know, it will be somewhere between like wakeboards and traditional surfboards.
I mean, I could see, honestly, Kelly Slater's wave company partnering with, obviously, Firewire would be the fit for him because he's co-owner in the brand.
Sure.
And just having a stockpile of boards there that are designed for the wave pool that you just show up and take one off the rack.
Totally.
That's what they will do.
Yeah. You know? I mean, if you're, and you could almost do it if you're, you know, 6'1", 180.
Yeah, exactly.
This is your board.
Right? Go to the rack, and if you're that size, you're these are five options.
Yeah.
So with Jerry's board, first of all, how come nobody that I saw on the internet commented on the fact that he didn't even get barreled?
Yeah.
Because did you notice that?
I did, but I think the way they stuck the camera, they tried to make it look like he did. Right?
Yes, they did try.
But he wasn't barreled, was he?
No.
Yeah.
Nobody even noticed it. I was like, this is Mr. Pipeline. Like, I'm not questioning Jerry's ability at all. Obviously, the guy knows how to get shacked. But how did you not, or why would you even post the footage without him getting barreled? Like, if he didn't get barreled that day, or maybe the wave wasn't doing it or whatever, but the wave actually was.
Yeah.
Don't even post it, because I would expect the internet to go afire. I'm shocked that people haven't freaked out about
it. But I think it was the pure, because I considered that as well and thought it was the angle. They tried to make it look like he got barreled. The wave was barreling. He was in the pocket. The angle they had, it was hard to tell where the lip was versus where Jerry was, right?
That's even worse. If you're trying to make it look like he did, sure. That is actually worse to me.
But I have to think that Kelly and Josh Kerr and whoever else has served, that pool makes it look easy. I bet it's really, 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 really hard to get barreled on that wave.
Bethany got barreled,
but Bethany is, she has one less arm to stick in there, A. And B, how did Bethany get barreled? Bethany got barreled on the right.
No, she got barreled on the left too. I specifically watched it for that purpose.
See, maybe Jerry's just too old.
He's not, though. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe he's not getting barreled at this age anymore.
I mean, and I'm sure he's getting barreled. If he went out to Pipeline, he'd get barreled, right?
It's throwing. Or like G-Land.
Sure.
Or something.
It's throwing. Yeah. You know,
and it's overhead.
Yeah, you position yourself and it throws over you.
Yeah.
That wave, I'm sure you have to work to get in that barrel, right? Like, this thing is churning along. The plow is pushing it out. And so you would have to have, again, such like, I think, not instinct, because Jerry would have instinct to get barreled, but I bet it's counterintuitive, and it's something that Jerry, I bet.
I'm taking the opposite stance. I think Jerry's a yogi. He's the most flexible dude on the planet, you know, or that's an overstatement, but he's super flexible despite his age, and he's Mr. Pipeline. Like, he should have just been sitting in the barrel the entire, it's got to be the easiest wave to get barreled on in the world.
You think so?
I would think so.
I bet it's not. I bet it's really counterintuitive.
Huh.
I bet you have to do things to get barreled that you don't do on a wave, and Jerry's an old dog and not learning that new trick.
Okay, here's my argument against that. Every single person who's ever surfed that wave got barreled on it.
There's been nobody over 30, except for Kelly, nobody over 33 who surfed that wave.
I'm calling him out.
Jerry Lopez.
Calling Jerry out.
Yeah. Jerry, go back and get barreled.
Yeah.
I bet it's counterintuitive. I bet if you and I rode that wave, okay, how long did you think Jerry surfed it before they started turning the cameras on?
I think they filmed all of it.
How many days do you think he surfed?
One day. I think it was a one-day shoot.
Exactly. So I bet it's hard to figure out how to get barreled in that wave in one day.
Okay, except every other person has.
So. Because they're all young. Jerry's old. Jerry's,
that means he's got more experience than anybody.
Sure, but Jerry has no experience of like surfing.
Oh. Nobody has. Every person that surfed it has no experience.
That's true. But except for...
The only argument you could make, I'm going to help you.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that it was the first time it's been a left. But then I say... But
absolutely
then
not. There's those technicians. And the fact that Jerry was the first person to surf the left is not true.
Right.
Like, I guarantee, not only did... I mean, Kelly may not have surfed it because his foot was broken. But for sure, they were dialing it in and the technicians were surfing to make sure. They didn't come out and turn it on and have Jerry, the greatest surfer alive, et cetera, Mr. Pipeline, blah, blah, blah. They didn't throw him to the wolves like that.
That was my thought, was like, well, it's the first time it's been a left, so maybe it's what you're saying, and it's actually counterintuitive, and it's harder to get barreled on the left. Yeah, but then I'm also looking at the wave barreling right behind him,
sure.
Going, I'm pretty sure you could just stall. Okay. And then, sure enough, Bethany got barreled.
But what if he didn't want to get barreled?
Oh.
What if Jerry Lopez was having too much fun? He's like, yeah, you and your barrels, people. I've seen more barrels. I've been in more barrels than all of you combined.
I don't have to go in the stinking barrel.
It's your best argument yet.
I'm going to sit here in the pocket where it's actually fun to surf. Like, in the barrel, those guys in the barrel, it seems like they're struggling to stay in the barrel, right? It's this balance. Sometimes. It's you're dragging, you're wedging yourself. Every wave I've seen from Kelly, the Kelly wave pool, where people are getting barreled, it doesn't look like that's an enjoyable... Like, Jerry's surf looked the most enjoyable of them all, and when it looked enjoyable was when he was going and kind of arcing swoops from bottom to top, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it looked fun, when he like kind of pumping. But that's, and I'm sure that's when it would feel fun. I'm sure if you're in the barrel, just like holding on, grinding, slowing down. Okay, I'm getting barreled. Plow's moving. I'm barreled. You would just feel like part of the machine.
It took you a long time to get to this argument.
But it's good.
But it's the best one you've had yet. And I can relate it to, I love beer. But if I'm at a party and the only beer option is Bud Light,
sure,
I'm not going to drink the beer.
Really?
I'll just drink water.
That's true.
So I think Jerry was like, dude, I've been barreled at G. I discovered G-Land,
yep,
ostensibly.
Yeah.
I'm Mr. Pipeline. I get barreled on overhead waves if it's like a proper.
Yeah, I don't.
But I'm not going to like tuck into this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just going to cruise and flow and trim and stuff like that.
See, that's
so
what
that's,
happened.
That's the argument.
That's what happened. Jerry Lopez was not about to bend himself, bend his yogi body into an
it's
inland
too good
barrel.
For it.
Yeah.
So not inland, though.
Yeah.
Kelly Slater wave pool. Oh, did you say
no,
inland?
Inland.
Oh,
that's
oh.
the thing about the inland. They really got the name.
They
it's
did.
Good.
So, okay. So. Title for this episode going up on Beach Grit.
Yeah.
Kelly Slater's wave pool is akin to Bud Light.
Yeah.
There you go.
Kelly's pool is Bud Light.
It's the
Bud
Light
of wave
beers.
Pools. Yeah. See, okay. Is there going to be an overhead barreling pool?
Yes, eventually.
Weber's? Who's?
I have no idea, but eventually there has to be.
I mean, is all they have to do get more water and a bigger plow?
Yes.
Is that the only thing? I mean, you just get a 8 foot or a 10 foot plow.
Yeah, I think this is obviously just proof of concept, and then monetize it, profit, make it profitable, and then you can dig in deeper.
Here's the thing, because riding an overhead barrel at that would be really fun, right? If you're a paying customer and they had a 20 foot plow dragging down the line, creating a, I mean, I don't know how what the plow to wave ratio is, but I'm sure it's a fixed thing. So say you had this giant plow making a, say, 15 foot barrel, right? Cruising down the line, getting barreled would be super fun for the everyman. It would be horrible to watch pros do that. Because there would be no, I mean, unless they start doing flips in the barrel or something silly.
I agree with you, and it's kind of a question mark I have about this upcoming event that they're going to do in the wave pool in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
Is
next couple of weeks, I think it's theoretically, it's like right around the corner, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Do they have a date on it yet?
I think they do. I think they have, okay. I think they have an honest to goodness holding period.
Okay.
Waiting period. Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
But that's my question mark too. Is just like, I don't think it's going to be that interesting.
If did you watch the Red Bull one? The
yeah. No, I didn't. Watch it. I watched the highlights after the fact.
Did you enjoy the highlights?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
I mean, again, for the novelty of it, I was kind of curious, but. Now that I know what it is, I wouldn't watch it again if they did another one.
I'll be very curious at this first event how you differentiate between the surfers, to be honest. Like,
right.
Theoretically, they should all have the skill to get like ride the barrel the entire time, right? Like drop in, pull in the pocket, ride the entire time. They should all have the ability to do a big turn. I think it's really hard to do airs on them, those waves, right?
Yeah.
Like the way it goes. So you're limited to a variety of turns. Mid-face wraps, whatever,
right.
And getting barreled. So at the end, if they all have the same ability on the same wave, does it become about who drew a more beautiful line? And then that'll be, or who, like, who made some poetry? Who was just kind of herky-jerky going from one thing to the next versus who made a kind of comprehensive, coherent dance on this wave?
I don't follow the Olympics or... balance beam outside of the Olympics or anything like that, but I have a feeling there's a lot of parallels in gymnastics, maybe, you know?
Except I feel that the gymnasts have drastically different skill from
Do
each
they?
Other. I think one gymnast is I think they're all good. I think, though, in the tiers of being good, like, some are the 0.0001% better than the other, which that's all the difference in the world, right? Somebody sticks a landing, somebody doesn't. The wave pool versus good surfers, to me, doesn't offer enough fudge room for having degree of difficulty mean anything, right?
I think there's way more variation between Italo Ferrer and Joel Parkinson than there is between gymnasts. So if those guys go in the wave pool, there is actually degrees of separation.
See, I would disagree. I bet Italo Ferrero and Joel, or let's stick, Italo's goofy, isn't he?
Yeah, okay, exactly. So that's my point.
Is Joel goofy?
No, come on. too much to drink already.
Let's pick two regular footers, though. Okay, let's say
Felipe and Joel. How's that?
Oh, I think Felipe would kill Joel on the wave pool.
Felipe's unbeatable at the wave pool.
Yeah.
He's the best.
If you can actually do airs. I don't know that you can do airs.
I think he can do airs anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, he probably could.
Joel wouldn't do an air.
Yeah. But Italo. Let's go Italo and Joel again.
Okay. What's the question?
The degree of separation is the degree of talent separation between Italo and Joel greater than the degree of difference between gymnasts at the Olympic level.
Whose names we don't know because we've never watched it.
Exactly. But I'm going to say, I'll say the difference in skill between Joel and Italo is greater, but I will say the playing field doesn't allow them to, like, doesn't allow them to figure out what those differences are. They'll basically look the same.
Exactly. So that's why I'm questioning the validity of the wave pool for competition, great. You know? But I do think, just for the record, Joel will smoke Italo in the wave pool. Based on, like, his style and what he's good at, speed, power, and flow.
Oh, but just think how mind-numbing it would be to watch Joel go down the line and do wrapping carbs. On a wave pool.
It would be. I don't want to necessarily see that. But here's what would be actually interesting is if they put Joel on the right and Italo on the left.
See, and that's, to me, that's the fun of the wave pool. If they treat the wave pool like it's a wave and they treat the contest like it's a surf contest, then I think it'll be a failure of imagination.
Right.
What I would love if they had fun with it, right, initially in Mark 1, if you did that, if you made all the regular foots go left, you made all the goofies go right.
Yeah.
What
if you did this? What if you added an element of imperfection to the wave without telling the surfer what it would be? So maybe like a rock on the bottom of the wave pool that creates something that they have to then respond to.
Or even better, a man with a giant stick who jumps out and tries to whack you off it. Yeah.
You can whack him off?
I mean, why not? If it was Joel Parkinson, he's a handsome man.
He is a handsome man, dude. What you were saying, though, about why people don't ride asymmetric, your question is, if it really is this much better, why hasn't everybody gotten on board and all the pros and all that stuff? The reason why I question that being a valid even question is, look at everything that's ever come before us with technology, with sports, with the first example I can think of is the guy, again, Olympic example. The high jump, right?
Sure.
Everybody used to do the high jump.
Jumping straight over.
With their chest over the bar. And then one guy realized Fosbury. Doing it with his back over the bar, right?
Yeah, the Fosbury flop.
Exactly. Yeah. And then now everybody can jump 3 feet higher into the air, whatever the separation was, and it revolutionized the sport. But when he did it, people were like, why didn't everybody do that before? It just took one guy to do it.
Sure.
So that hasn't happened yet.
But there's been a lot of asymmetrical boards. Like, I've seen asymmetrical boards now in the marketplace for how long?
So
you're in the
Carl Ekstrom
got
a patent for it. I think it was the early 80s,
sure.
Like 82, 83.
Patent.
He got a patent
What specifically did he patent?
I don't know, but that is a fact.
Is a patent still...
No, it expired.
Okay. So now everybody can do asymmetrical boards.
And they still were anyways.
Pros, whatever. Pros, you go do your thing. I don't really care about what... I mean, I care about what you're doing, but... In terms of how it relates to my own surfing, I couldn't care less. But if I'm going into a shop and there's an asymmetrical board and a traditional shortboard, and the shopkeeper says, okay, hey, here we have this. This will do this. Is that what it is? People don't want to take chances because the expenditure...
They're spending $600.
Yeah, and that's, so it's an expenditure.
And there's, like, too many variables there.
And you and I are lucky that we get loaners.
We are, for sure, but I also think that it's incumbent upon us, having those loaners, to then kind of shine the light, you know, point the direction. Just be like, hey, guys, this is my experience. Let's talk about it. And here's the direction.
Which is, I mean, again, that's what my Beach Crit story was going to be. It's just a real honest analysis of the way I felt on it, which I haven't felt this way on a surfboard in quite some time.
Right.
And that in and of itself is completely worth, I think, if you're going to buy another surfboard, if you have a couple traditional shortboards right now in your quiver, you know, that are between whatever, like you don't need another one. I have no idea why. Yeah, everybody should buy an asymmetrical board.
I agree. I think that it's also part of the conversation that people should be buying boards from shapers that they can have a conversation with, rather than going off the rack like you just talked about.
But
like,
how many? I think there's still a degree of, and Matt at Album at least. I mean that seemed like a super, you know, friendly environment where you could rock in and not get vibed out. I think a lot of people still get vibed out because they don't know, you know, they don't know what leaders are, and they don't know these things. They don't want to look like assholes in front of the cool guy.
Yeah.
And so they'll just go buy one off the rack.
But I think you'll actually have more of that barrier of entry in the retail environment where you're not comfortable having the conversation with a sales clerk than you would if you just called up a shaper and been like, hey, I know nothing.
Yeah.
Here's where I surf and how I surf and my weight and my height. Can you talk me through it?
Yeah.
I think shapers are more friendly in that, you know, conversation.
That's true.
So, dude, we're 48 minutes into this show, and we need to move on in the notes.
Sorry.
So you can make it to your next meeting. You don't need to apologize. Yeah. But
I'm apologizing to the fans.
Oh, okay. I need to see your shoes. Due diligence. What's the shoe conversation today?
It's a Saint Laurent. They stopped doing these, but when Hedi Slimane, the designer, got in, he basically ripped off a Van. The brilliant part about these
off
is, I mean, it's just a Van
Vans,
Classic, right?
Vans,
it looks like a Van Classic.
Put it down so I can get a photo.
The thing about it is, though, and here's... Do you wear Vans Classics?
No.
Why not? It's just not your shoe.
It's just not my shoe, yeah.
Okay.
I look for comfort more than... Comfort and function more than aesthetic, and those are, like, flat-footed, and I'm not sure that they're necessarily comfortable. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, we should... I mean, that's a longer discussion right there. But I read... Have you read the book, The World's Most Dangerous Places?
No.
It was a fantastic book. It was I don't even know what he was, some journalist or arms smuggler or something who had been to a bunch of bad countries and then did a funny kind of Lonely Planet guide to the world's most dangerous places. So he, you know, would give them star. It was like they got skulls and then it moved up to something. So, you know, whatever. It's an older book now. He did a couple iterations of it. But he in there at some point, and I read this, I was probably fresh into college, said something that the Converse All-Star was the world's most perfect shoes. Like, you're going to go travel. Everybody will get expensive hiking boots, this, that, and the other thing. Converse All-Star, he says, you don't want too much cushion, which, you know, makes sense, I think. Like, cushion, what your feet theoretically provide the cushion that your body needs.
Mm-hmm.
And they dry, they're canvas, so they dry easily. They're easy. You can wash them, whatever, right? Mm. He made the argument for the canvas shoe being the world's most perfect shoe.
Hmm.
And then I thought, okay, he's, you know, for that kind of shoe, he's right. And so I just didn't do the Converse All-Star. I went for the Vans Classic. But it is a comfortable shoe.
Okay.
It's a great shoe. The problem is you wear it barefoot. You've got maybe, if you're lucky, 10 days before it smells so bad that, you know, it's like unbearable even to you. Like, you're sitting on the airplane and you can smell your shoe wafting up. And it's unfortunate. So... Hedi Slimane at Saint Laurent figured out what I'm going to do is make a Vans Classic, but line the entire interior with leather. So the entire thing is leather from the top to the bottom to every part of it. And so I wear these shoes. I've had these shoes for a good 3 years now, where I'm only barefoot. And
I'm not sniffing it.
No, you don't have to sniff it, but. You would know if I had been wearing a pair of Vans Classics for 3 years barefoot, it would be an abomination.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, it is a
fascinating.
Yeah, it's a good shoe.
Okay,
but you can't get them anymore.
Well, let's talk about the pattern. The pattern looks like a traditional bandana.
I think it's when Hedi Slimane, again, French designer for Saint Laurent. He lives in LA, has lived here for a while, and I think he's super fascinated by California culture, and I think this is a nod to the Bloods. So it's like a Bloods
Crips, Bloods. Bloods, bandana.
So it's a bandana and it's
yep.
red.
Yep, red bandana.
Hip, dude. Did you wear those for the show, or were they just like?
No, it's like totally. I totally forgot. Yeah, I was just. These are the. This is a common shoe.
They're amazing, and of course, they're not tied.
Never.
Looking good, dude.
Thanks.
I did have people comment. Somebody sent me a direct message saying they don't tie their shoes anymore.
Oh yeah, good. Why? Why?
Because you told them.
I know exactly, but why? Nobody should tie their shoes. What are you going to do with your tied shoes?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not wearing tied shoes. Yeah. I'm wearing sandals right now. That actually reminds me of Bobby Martinez, which, did you see?
Stab?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't read it yet. I saw it, and I saw the pull quote.
Yeah.
But I didn't read it.
So, basically, Beach Grit reported this as well. Derek reported this on Beach Grit as well. Like, the WSL's potentially going to lay out a brand new format for 2018.
Yep. This is good to talk about.
Yeah. And
this is what I was most excited to talk about, quite frankly.
Is it really? I was actually not going to talk about it.
Oh, what? This is what I came here to talk about.
Oh,
today.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool. Let's do it then. I need to give credit to my other co-host of Spit Podcast, Scott Bass, who has actually been championing these changes for years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like literally for years, and he does it all the time, and he's like, shorter windows, like shorter waiting periods, fewer surfers, so that we don't have to, it'll be less expense for the WSL, so they're not sending everybody across the world for 2 weeks at a time. And by the way, I don't want to watch Kayaten surf, or, I mean, Kayaten's not on tour anymore, so I don't want to watch Adam Melling surf, Stu Kennedy surf, unless it's Snapper, but like, I only want to watch the best guys surf. So how do we do that? Well, fewer guys on that run on one swell instead of multiple swells, and, you know, better surf spots. We don't need to go to Brazil. We don't need to go to where. So anyway, the WSL is instituting some of these changes. We could talk about those changes. I do want to talk about Bobby Martinez really quickly. Bobby doesn't provide anything of interest for me at this point at all in terms of what he says. I don't know why anybody's interested in interviewing him. Like, there's an element of sensationalism that appeals to me, and his surfing is still phenomenal. There's some recent footage of him, and he's in the new film Snapped 3. But it's like, I read through everything he says and just go, not only was that not insightful, it was actually pretty dumb.
Yeah. Okay. Here's what I think about Bob Martinez. Is
Bob.
Bob is the temperature of truly the lack of personality in professional surfing, right? The fact that he's the go-to when it's time, because 2011, right? So 6 years ago. It's 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 6 years ago. Six fucking years ago, he said in an interview, fuck this tennis tour, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 6 years ago.
Yeah.
6 years ago. That's 6 years ago.
Yep.
He said that. That was the most interesting thing that's happened on a surfing podium ever. Not ever, but at least in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And so people keep going back to Bobby Martinez for more like when the WSL does something or changes something or anything, because it's the only fucking interesting thing that's happened, which is, I hope the WSL, again, back to our point earlier, whoever wrote in about, you know, where are the personalities?
Bruce from Austin, Texas.
Bruce from Austin, Texas. Bruce, you made a 100% valuable point, and that's why Bobby Martinez, the only reason he matters is because the WSL has done a very, very poor job of pushing personalities, and by popping off on the mic, it looked for 1 minute like he had a personality.
And I think he does have a personality.
Sure.
He just doesn't have any insight.
No, it's nothing against Bobby. It's just, but that's the lie. Who else? Who do you want to hear from? Who else do you want to hear from? That's the problem.
That's the problem is that there's a lot of people on the tour that I would love to hear from, but they can't talk about it.
Yeah, precisely. Who would feel open enough without getting fined or loser spot or whatever. So Bobby is this real easy thing to go back to.
And it's going to get, people are going to click. Sure. I click.
You click.
Even though I know I don't care what he has to say,
sure.
I click.
You click and you get to put Todd Klein's face in that interview with Bobby is worth seeing about 1,000 times. And so it always gives you a reason to put that video clip. You know what?
Yeah,
fuck
exactly.
This tennis tour. And you get to see Todd Klein there biting his bottom lip, smile with his goofy smile. And it's a brilliant moment. But the fact that that is the only brilliant moment in the the only brilliant post heat moment in the last 6 years is just a real bummer.
It is. So I'd be curious to know, do you remember a follow up video that came out after that where
Bobby was playing tennis?
Yes.
Yeah.
I shot that video.
Really?
And edited it.
Of course I remember that video.
Awesome.
That's totally great.
So yeah. Todd Klein called me up like the night before, and he's like, yeah. Dude, I got this idea, because Todd was with Quicksilver at the time. He's like, I got this idea. Let's drive up tomorrow to Santa Barbara. Are you free? It's a Sunday. Like, let's do this. I got Bobby. He's in. We're going to do it on a tennis court. And Todd had the whole concept. And I'm like, all right, I'll clear my schedule. Let's do it. So we drove up there. Listen to, speaking of XM radio, I remember specifically we listened to his XM radio Pearl Jam station. Amazing. The entire time. Yeah. It was Pearl Jam the whole way there and the whole way back. And I was like, you know what?
I don't mind
Pearl Jam has some deep cuts.
Yeah,
dude,
Pearl Jam has pretty good deep cuts
that are better than
they get a whole XM station that, and you can on do. Like, yeah, I would make fun of it, and except you can kind of enjoy the Pearl Jam.
Well, it was way better than Jeremy and Even Flow. Yeah. And like, I mean, have you heard Corduroy off Vitalogy?
Corduroy is one of my favorite Pearl Jam songs.
The jam, dude. And I think their documentary had just come out. It was called 20. Anyway. So yeah, I shot that video and edited it, and then like he posted it on Quicksilver's thing. They got super upset with him and took it down for a day or two, and it went back up. But anyway, so I've spent that amount of time with Bobby. Super nice guy.
Sure.
Like, we had a blast together. I have no criticism about Bobby himself. But I read his stuff. What was embarrassing to me was Stab posted that article, and the very first question was, hey, Bobby, did you see these changes that are happening with the WSL? And Bobby's like, no, I saw a headline, but no, I didn't read it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, oh, then we paused the interview, sent in the article, he read through it, and then we continued the conversation. Yeah. I'm like, Bobby doesn't even care.
Bobby doesn't care. That's the thing, though. Bobby doesn't follow professional surfing.
So then how much insight are you going to get out of him when he just skimmed your article real quickly so that you could continue the phone conversation?
Zero. I mean, Bobby's like, again, you get to replay that original video. That's what you get by going to Bobby. And, you know, I mean, frankly, you know who would be more interesting to talk to about this, and I'm going to do this when I get home, maybe, is Noah Dean. Mm. Like, it'd be fun to talk to Noah Dean, who the latest to say, fuck the WSL, what he thinks about these changes, right? Because Noah Dean, I'm sure, not only is he more relevant than Bobby in, you know, today's game, he was the last one to pop off at the WSL. So it'd be more fun, or more at least insightful. And if Noah Dean said, I don't know what they're doing, then the WSL, kind of has a problem.
So I thought at that point, when I read that in Bobby's interview, like, well, they should just scrap this interview. Like, don't post it. If Bobby doesn't have thoughts on it, or if he didn't read it on his own, scrap it.
I mean,
but they made something out of nothing. And then I read all of Bobby's stuff, and I was just like, well, this actually just kind of makes Bobby look uninformed and not that smart.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes Bobby look a little sour grapesy when...
Always.
Yeah, that's part of Bobby's persona, I think, is to be sour grapes about that, which I don't know how much of that is interviewers kind of pulling that out of him, the sour grape stuff, because I would imagine Bobby, honestly, at this point, doesn't care. If he still cares...
He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's getting paid whatever he's getting paid by Monster. It's probably
that's
not much.
All it is at this point.
Yeah, and... I mean, Bobby, even if he had stayed on tour and all that, would be in the total twilight of his career right now, no matter what, age-wise. He's in the twilight of his career, no matter what he did. So going to him as, like, the prophet for... Because what he was saying, what he was saying was wrong with the WSL back then was not at all what was wrong with the WSL. Or back then it was the ASP. Like, Bobby was angry about very specific, like, union worker points, right?
Totally.
It was about, like, this is not fair to the union workers, the union worker professional surfer, because people were going to get lopped off. That's what he was mad about, which is exactly what's happening now, is people are going to get lopped off. That lopping people off tour for the consumer is not the problem with the WSL.
Right.
From Bobby's perspective, as Mr. Union Man, Mr. AFL-CIO, it was to protect people's surfers' careers.
Yeah,
I do not care about Stuart Melling. Is that his name? Am I mixing both of them? Stuart Kennedy.
They are the same guy.
Adam Melling. I don't care about either of their career, or I don't care about their earning potential. I don't care about any of it. A, because I'm an asshole. B, because they just don't interest me, right?
I believe in Darwinism in the sense that, like, only the strong survive, buddy.
Sure.
Like, if you're not surfing as good... Adam Melling, who is a miniature Mick Fanning, he surfs exactly the same, but a lesser version of... We already have Mick Fanning.
Totally.
So go away.
Don't need Melling. See, and here's the thing, though, again, with Bobby. I think everybody confused Bobby's fuck the WSL, or I'm sorry, fuck the ASP rant on that it's not interesting. That was had nothing to do with this rant. It wasn't that it was too long. It wasn't that it was not interesting. It wasn't that they were surfing in bad waves. It wasn't any of that. It was that they were cutting. They weren't allowing the QS guys to come in like they once had or whatever.
Because they were doing the mid-season rotation.
Yeah, they were sloughing off right. CT guys, and Bobby, as Mr. Union president, didn't like to see that happen. Totally rightfully for his position, and who, you know, he was protecting both his job and the jobs of his friends, yeah. Right? But it has nothing to do with the fundamental problem with the ASP was, which, again, they're trying to fix again, except, you want to know something?
Yes.
I disagree with many of the changes.
Okay. Yeah, let's talk about it. You said you wanted to talk about the changes, which, by the way, are just speculative.
Sure, sure.
This was one article. I don't know where Derek got his information from.
I think so.
Because Derek seems like it came before Stabs came.
Derek's came before Stabs. Yeah. We had a bad-ish headline where it kind of buried the lead on the headline. But, yeah. I think the WSL, from my understanding, had a meeting with the surfers, mm-hmm. And they explained to the surfers possibilities of how the tour will look moving forward. I don't think any of them are set in stone. I'm sure a lot of them, the wheels are moving to make this. I think they know they need to not only shortening the amount of time you surf. Basically getting into one swell window.
Yeah, exactly.
Is important for the WSL where they're... But here's the thing. I don't know that that's going to make surfing better, to be honest with you. I think that where does swell... How many... And I've been... I'm going to totally argue what I've... Well, the opposite side that I've been arguing for the last 3 years.
We are complex human beings, Chaz. Allowed to have...
Changing. I've and evolved. Also... My opinion has evolved.
Opposing...
Sure.
Points.
My opinion has evolved on this matter. How many places do the swells actually, like, where you honestly have one swell and that's it?
I mean, everywhere in the world gets one swell.
Sure, but they... But
oh, you mean like where it's like a cross-up swell of like...
No, I'm saying like a... Okay, like...
Two swells at once?
Look at J-Bay this year, yeah. Right? It was... How long do the events go now?
Well, there's a 2-week waiting period.
Sure.
And they oftentimes, well, the length required to run the event is like 3.5 days for yeah. the men's side of the tour. So you need more than one swell to run the event.
Totally. Which, okay.
So you're hoping that the swells align so you can run it in 3 or 4 days straight.
And I guess my point on this is I oddly kind of want Adam Melling to be there to get chewed up and spat out. I don't want no losers rounds. I want every round amount. I want Adam Melling, quite frankly, to be able to beat Mick Fanning. Because Mick Fanning was having a shocker, who cares, whatever the reason. I want those loser guys to actually be able to beat the winners, and that's really hard when you have how many they have 2 no losers rounds.
Right.
They have round 2 and round...
Round 3 and round 5. No. Shoot. Round 1 and round 4.
Round 1 and 4, exactly. 2 no losers rounds? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Where everybody surfs...
You can lose in the event twice.
You can lose twice and win,
yeah.
Which is asinine. Take that away.
Yeah.
Keep it to be... Okay, so the problem is... Here's the problem. Ready for the problem?
Yeah.
I was thinking about this a lot today. The problem is, do you watch Street League Skateboarding?
Mm-mm.
What Street League Skateboarding did... Street League Skateboarding is skateboarding's kind of, you know, de facto tour just because nobody else is doing anything. I don't think it's recognized. It's not like the WSL in that's legitimately... The world champion skateboarding, I don't think, cares as much about a tour and all that. Street League filled in this blank, said, okay, we will be the tour and champion themselves as the tour, but I don't know that skateboarders necessarily feel that, oh yeah, this guy is the champion mm-hmm. skateboarder. All to say, they thought, okay, let's take the best skaters in the world and have them skate in a one-day event, right? Which is basically kind of what I think people think they want with WSL.
not only one day, a 3-hour event, like a, or a, you know, 2.5-hour cut for television event. So in the final, they have an kind of aired prelim thing. I think there's like 15 skaters or something that skate in that. But the final, I think, is 8 skaters. So they take the best 8, theoretically, the best 8 skateboarders in the world. And it couldn't be more boring. And when you look at, and it's the best, it's the 8 best. It's like if you took the 8, if you had John John, who would the 8 best surfers in the world be right now? Let's say John John.
Felipe.
Jordy.
Julian.
Kelly.
Even though he's like 20-something.
And hurt.
Gabriel Medina.
Gabe.
How many do we got?
So we got 6. Give me 2 more.
Can we do the 6 best?
Okay, let's do the 6 best surfers. Same time. You would get, I think, so bored. Like, you need the Mellings. You need the Kennedys. Even though I make fun of them, somehow you need these guys to make the other guys more interesting, right? You need a little bit of a longer... Surfing needs to breathe a little more. If you compact it too much, I think you lose any kind of draw of, like, momentum forward. I think they need to keep the surfers... They need to make it a 3-day event. Yeah. Like, you can't have it a 3.5-day event. Lose the fucking waiting period or the fucking... no losers rounds,
right?
And keep it at around 30 surfers, and just chew through them. And then you have drama, right? The bottom guy could actually knock the top guy out.
Rarely, though.
But
I mean, Keanu Asing won France last year,
sure.
But that's it. Like, it doesn't happen, or
it doesn't happen that often. But if there's a with
and no, nobody cares. Can you remember one wave that Keanu surfed in France last year?
Of course not. But when I'm watching the heat in the moment, I want Keanu to beat Jordy, right?
Yeah.
Purely for drama. Purely for your... I think most... In Australia and America, at least, I think most sporting fans have the underdog, you know,
sure.
thing.
Always.
Where, of course, you don't want to watch fucking Keanu Asing win an event. You don't want to watch him surf every time. But oddly, as the heats go heat by heat, generally you cheer for the underdog. Or if you don't have a real rooting interest in the thing.
Of course.
Which all of a sudden, when you knock out the no losers, and I know why they put them in there, right? You want to watch your best surf, favorite surfer continue
to surf.
Or
also, there's so many variables in surfing that you might just not get a wave. You could be the best surfer in the world and you don't get the wave.
Great.
So they're making accommodation for that with a no losers round.
Shouldn't be accommodation for that.
I agree.
It should be. It would
totally
be.
Agree.
It would be way funner to watch John John get skunked than to watch John John lose twice and win.
Well, I totally agree with that. By the way, surfer number 7 and 8 on your top 8 list would be Matt Wilkinson and Owen Wright.
Matt Wilkinson doesn't count, and Owen Wright doesn't count either.
Okay. So I agree with everything you're saying. I think there's a middle ground. I don't think it needs to be 6 or 8 surfers, and I don't think it needs to be 32. I think it needs to be 16. But so you have the wild cards in that top 16 still, but it's not... It is boring right now. It is boring, and the waiting period is too long. And I think maybe this is all instituted by Sophie. Maybe this was in place before Sophie. But the reality is their bottom line, their expenses are just too high.
Except that the thing is, I think it costs – here's the thing, right? It costs $1 to $2 million to run one of those events. It doesn't cost less if you run it shorter. You're still – it's the setup. It's all the costs associated. You're not paying X amount a day that you're going over. Like, that's all totally negligible, right? These things are, the cost of them is set. So all you're doing by, if say you were going to do it into a one day, all you do is lose your build up and your pump up time, right?
Yes and
you're
no.
Still,
I think,
I think
additionally, you're losing audience by dragging out the 2-week waiting period, because you and I are the only guys who are going to wake up every morning to see Dawn Patrol, whether they ran or not. I mean, you and I, meaning you and I and all the listeners who are listening, but the vast majority of the public will not do that, but they would tune in for 3 days.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think that there's enough. Here's the thing. I think that the surf industry has left the actual surf fan and left him a long time ago. In search of the mythical non-endemic unicorn, the person who's going to buy the clothes, watch the stuff, consume the product, and not surf. And they've been chasing that nut forever. I think they should peel it back and say, okay, stinking Surf Splendor listener, you are basically all we have in this entire thing. And there's how many? 100,000. Not Surf Splendor listeners, but how many core surfers? 100,000 in the States?
Dude, I have no idea.
Let's say it's
not a lot. Not enough to make it profitable.
Ooh, are you sure? What if it was enough to make it profitable? Like, it's not a...
If they charged us each $60 a year to, like, view their events, maybe it would be. But not enough to make it profitable. If they're then earning their income off of advertisers, and those advertisers are surf brands, I'm not buying surf brand clothing. When was the last time you bought...
So I'm starting again. I don't want to buy, you know... I don't know. There's something about... I feel that... Am I going to really buy surf clothes?
Do you, though, is the question.
When was the last... Yeah, I went... I bought a pair of Dehui trunks.
At Costco?
I saw them
at Costco.
Yeah, totally. So here's the funny thing. This was... I think I was at Surfing Magazine, and it was like, oh, whatever. I thought, okay, fuck all you people. You know, everybody in the surf industry loves how they don't wear surf clothes, right? I mean, nobody wears it. And people, in my experience, people love to talk about how they don't wear stuff. And I finally got to the point where I'm fed up and like, you know, I am. I'm wearing something kind of surfy. But
I don't even know what that is.
It's Kasubi, so it's not really. It's like a strike.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
But with the Dehui thing, so it was like they were doing board short week or something silly at surfing, right? So I said, I'm going to go on and buy a pair of Dehui trunks full retail. So I found some full retail somewhere. I bought them. I emailed Eddie Rothman, co-founder of Dehui, and said, hey, Eddie, I bought a pair of your trunks. And he said, where'd you fucking buy them? And I said, oh, I bought them, whatever it was. It was some online surf shop thing. Okay. And he said, how much you pay? And I said, oh, and I thought he was going to be proud of me. And I said, I paid full retail. It was like $52 or something. He said, you paid fucking what? Those fuckers. Dude, you should go to Costco and get them. They're $14 there. Eddie was pushing me to Costco to get the Dehui board short because they were cheaper at Costco than they were at wherever. And he was going to hunt down the people selling them for $50 and knock them on the head.
I thought he was a capitalist based on what I know about him.
Eddie is a bleeding heart surf socialist.
Wow.
Yeah.
Little did I know. Well, there's breaking news here.
But all to say, though...
So the WSL profitability and...
I think that all I know is... I don't really know what the truth is. What I know is that the core surfer has not been serviced for 15 years, 20 years.
Agreed.
And that's all I care about. That's all I care about at Beach Grit. That's all I care about here. That's all I care about as a surfer. I don't care to bring the non-endemic unicorn to Beach Grit. I don't care if our numbers are 18 million people coming to Beach Grit every day, if, you know, 17.5 million of those are not surfers, because that's not... I'd rather have a neat, tidy, if we can make it a business, a neat, tidy little business that actually matters, right? Yeah. That actually
whether there are 100,000 core surfers in the United States or a million in the world or whatever that number is, I feel there's enough to, as long as you're not greedy, to both make a good product for, to inspire, to actually give them something they want. And this is what I think the WSL needs to do. I think the WSL needs to worry about where they're going to make their money later. And first, just see if they can make something that the core surfer likes, which back to Austin from Austin. What's his name? Bob from Austin.
Bruce.
Bruce from Austin.
Bruce is getting so much love this show.
Bruce is getting love. Because Bruce had a good point, right? If the WSL cared about Bruce, then they would have shows that were more, you know, more edgy, were more gossipy and stuff like that, which would, again, I don't know that Mom from Chicago watches that show, but yeah. Bruce from Austin would.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying about the ASP and now the WSL hasn't been servicing the core surf community and not even trying to. I agree. They've been trying to leap that chasm into like, and that's Bobby Martinez is, by the way, that's his whole rant on Stab's article was like, they keep trying to make it again, quote, the tennis tour. And it's just not that. And he gives a story about surfing the US Open and his homies, quote, from Santa Barbara came down and watched him surf and goes, hey man, all you guys do the exact same thing on every wave.
Yeah.
And Bobby said, you know what?
Yeah.
You're right. And Bobby, of course, knows that we're not doing the same thing on every wave, but he said, for everybody viewing this other than us,
that's how it looks.
It looks like we're all doing the same thing. And I will tell you for a fact, like my dad, whoever, can't tell the difference between Coco Ho doing a top turn at lowers and Kelly Slater doing a top turn at lowers. Looks exactly the same.
Sure.
So the WSL, if they want to really pander to that broad market, it needs to be the Big Wave World Tour or something like that, where it's just guys riding mountains, you know?
Except, I don't know. I think there's a way, because everything started somewhere, right? Like tennis is,
yeah.
I mean, talk about tennis. Like tennis at least is objective, right? There's no judge. I mean, there's a line judge or whatever, but it's, you actually score points by making it in or out, et cetera. So it's a lot easier, but like, you have a core tennis player who understands all the nuance, and then you have somebody who tunes in for Roger Federer, and then you can spread it out, and then you can get this bigger audience, right? I feel surfing theoretically could do that too. The only problem is they haven't, and again, and not only the ASP, WSL, but I'm talking about Billabong and Quiksilver and all the brands too. They haven't been making stuff for surfers for 20 years. Everybody's taken the core surfer, the guy who actually wakes up in the morning, you know, drives down to the beach, looks at the waves, goes surfing. Been taking that guy for granted for 20 years, that guy is going to somehow consume what they produce. That guy has stopped consuming the surf brands, which is, I think, why they've all gone bankrupt, right?
You're talking about me, by the way. What? I surfed this morning. I was done. I was at Costco or at the grocery store by 8.
Yeah.
Costco after that, Trader Joe's. Like, I was done by 8.
Sure.
And, yeah, I don't buy their clothing.
Totally.
I don't wear their wetsuits.
Totally.
I don't buy any of that
stuff. I mean, they're done. I think the big surf industry, I think there's smaller brands that are going to come up and actually start to hit you again. Because you're going to be excited about a super warm wetsuit that's, you know, you'd even be happy to pay, I'm sure, a lot of money for a wetsuit that is both warmer and more flexible.
I would. By the way, for the record, Need Essentials, which you guys did an article about.
Yeah.
I was going to chime in the comment section, and I just didn't. But that's what I wear. They're amazing, dude. The wetsuits are super cheap, fantastic, as good quality as Patagonia suits I've owned that were four times as expensive.
Sure. I mean, and there's Independent Surf Co., which is another amazing wetsuit, right? I mean, there's a bunch of these kind of boutique wetsuit companies coming up now that actually make a product for the core surfer, because no non-surfer is going to buy a wetsuit, right?
Right.
And you can make a neat, tidy little business. So I think when...
I agree with that point.
With the death of the big brands, and again, did you read yesterday? You didn't go to Beach Creek yesterday. I threw a 5-banger up yesterday. 5 stories.
Tell me the article.
One of the stories was that Rip Curl, Quiksilver, and Billabong are going to become the same company.
Yes.
Which is a rumor, but I think there's truth to it in that.
Well, because the
oak tree,
the investment, the venture capital that's involved in Billabong and Quiksilver
is going to roll up.
Potentially could,
and then all of a sudden, you know, from their perspective, you have the three remaining iconic surf brands, and you have their forward-facing, consumer-facing side different, but you have, you know, one distribution model, and I'm seeing how they think that makes sense. And again, if you can sell those brands, Quiksilver, Rip Curl still makes fantastic wetsuits, but in terms of their clothing, if you could sell their software to, you know, Amazon or wherever that stuff is selling now, good on you, right? But no surfer is going and buying a Quiksilver t-shirt. God bless Quiksilver. No surfer is buying Billabong trunks, I don't think. I mean, maybe some are, but I don't know any. Surfers are still buying stuff, though, and it's small, kind of nimble brands that I think are finally coming back to service the core of the market. And I think the WSL should take a hard look at, okay, let's make a product that the core, let's do a fucking panel of core surfers, of like surfers, right? Who are not watching WSL. Let's ask why they're not watching. Let's put, you know, do, if you're going to focus group, don't focus group guy in Minneapolis, focus group a real surfer. Why aren't you watching? What do you want to see? Is it too long? Because maybe it's not too long, right? To that guy. Maybe yeah. That guy, like a podcast, can never be. How long are we at right now?
An hour and 20 minutes.
Amazing. As a podcast can never be too long, maybe professional surfing contests can't really be too long either. It's just what we're seeing is not right, and the interstitial stuff isn't entertaining enough, right?
It isn't. Like yeah, that's true.
The between
while we're waiting for them to catch a
precisely,
wave.
Precisely. Yeah. While we're waiting for them to catch a wave, we're not being entertained. And maybe that's the problem.
Well, so I think that Quiksilver, I mean, maybe I don't need to even explain this, but like Quiksilver kind of outgrows, they grow to a point where the core community can't actually make them profitable.
Sure.
If they sold everything to the core community, they're not going to make enough money. So they start selling to everybody in the Midwest and leveraging their core. Like, we still have Dane Reynolds, and he's core.
Yeah.
So we will then use that and market it to the Midwest to sell to them. And then they create an offshoot brand, Summer Teeth, for
sure.
Dane Reynolds. And then that'll service the core community while we sell Quiksilver at large to the middle America. So I think like Oak Tree and all that, they're not concerned about the core anymore. It makes room for new companies to pop in, like Former, to service the core community. Where I'm spending my money, I look at Former, and obviously I'm not the demographic that they're even trying to sell to. But like, I bought something from Patagonia recently.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Patagonia for me is they've done a phenomenal job of doing both things.
Sure.
They've grown to a point where they could service everybody, but they're still core. More importantly, I believe in the ethos of the company.
And Patagonia, I think, at this point, where did I read it? Well, it might have been Stab, too. Stab's had some bangers lately. Ashton Goggins doing real good. They have a new editor-in-chief.
Ashton, but yeah. He's still writing for Surfer.
No, he's done. He's the editor-in-chief of Stab.
I know, but there was an article on Surfer this last month.
It would have been, yeah, I think he just left.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's all very recent. But, yeah, Ashton is really Stab. I've got nothing but positive things to say about Stab magazine. But I think it was on Stab, in any case, where, who was it? It was Bobby again? Somebody. Somebody was talking about who fucking was it? Well, we'll find it later. But
yeah.
It was talking about the core, or, you know, the big five or big three or whatever surf brands left, that none of them have any family involved.
Yeah.
And Patagonia does. It's, you know, Fletcher, whatever.
I did read that.
Yeah.
Who was that?
It was somebody who mattered talking
yeah,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I think it was that. But anyway, like, you know, Patagonia.
It was Maurice Cole.
It was Mo Cole.
Chiming in. On yeah. A Beach Grit article.
Oh, was it Beach Grit?
I thought so.
It probably was. It's a better place to be.
Yeah.
but yeah, whatever the case, Patagonia's a family company, right? And that's awesome. Like, when you're not trying to, it's great. If you can make your millions of dollars, if you're, you know, Wooly, Woolcott from Volcom, and you can go out and sell, you know, make millions of dollars.
What was it? 40 mil?
Something crazy. Twice.
Yeah.
I mean, he did it twice, yeah. Right? Because they took it public and then they sold to Caring Group. And so he doubled down. Brilliant. Awesome. You know, sell and get out. And like, my cap is tipped to you. But it's the ones that kind of try to do stay in and be out. It's just not going to work,
mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah, again. And I think
in the surf industry now, there's amazing brands coming up that are fun, that are making stuff. It's a bunch of surfboard shapers, right? Who are, I mean, from Matt from Album Surf, which, like, beautiful shop, beautiful boards. He's making a living, you know, maybe not just from that, but he's making a living partially from doing that. Mm-hmm. There's money to be made in this. It just maybe isn't millions of dollars anymore. Maybe.
No, but again, like we talked about on the previous episode, 1,000 true fans. You know what I
mean?
That's
it. That's
all you need. You don't need, and it's the same thing goes on TV, by the way.
Yeah.
Whatever the girls or whatever the big popular show is on TV does not have the market share that Love Boat had.
Yeah.
But the fan base
is rapid.
Loves it totally. Way more. And it's actually, so I completely agree that that is true. By the way, on your watch, do you have to rush out of here? I got a lot more to talk about.
No, yeah, I'm good.
Okay, let
I'm
me know
good.
When you got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a bunch of topics, and we can continue on that same one. I wanted to actually segue into, I don't know, there's like this kind of ongoing theme just with social media warrior you talked about recently on Beach Crit, and Bobby kind of getting out there and saying what he wants, and like everybody gets riled up, and it's sensationalist journalism, and let's talk about the word racist real quick.
Yeah, let's.
You are a linguist.
Yep.
Words matter.
Words, they don't matter.
They do?
They don't. That's what you learn as a linguist.
I interpreted that conversation entirely incorrectly.
Oh, yeah. Everything is malleable. Everything's in English. Words matter in other languages. In English, everything is play.
What's your educational background, just for the record?
It's amazingly poor. I got my undergraduate Perfect. Degree in intercultural studies and my graduate degree in applied linguistics.
So is that a master's degree?
Master's degree in applied linguistics.
Yeah. So a linguist.
I'm a linguist.
All right, perfect.
Yeah. Applied linguist.
It's different.
It's cheap.
So you publicly shamed Surfer Magazine for the caption they wrote.
That was good. Do you like that?
Well, I'm going to
tell
you.
Three stories out of it.
I'm going to tell you what I thought.
Yeah.
You got criticized for making three stories out of it.
I love that. Any story I can turn to three.
Yeah. It was an article that they wrote about Nigeria, surfing in Nigeria, and they wrote their social media, you know, guy wrote a caption to advertise the article. He wrote the caption on Instagram, and the offending line was, quote, "The country of Nigeria has always been synonymous with the darker parts of humanity."
The darker parts of humanity.
Right.
Nigeria.
End quote.
Africa.
End quote.
Yep. Darker.
So you wrote an article and said, quote, "Sometimes our words are just racist and wildly inappropriate all by themselves." You writing that article, Surfer Magazine actually deleted the original post and then reposted the image with a new caption that said, quote, "On paper, Nigeria is synonymous with militant conflict, terrorism, and kidnappings."
Which was even worse, I thought.
"But a small coast village is trying to change these perceptions one wave at a time." And then they finished their caption with, quote, "We apologize for the poor choice of words used to describe this story in an earlier post." End quote.
Yeah.
So you're calling them racist for even writing that.
Sure.
You think the second one's worse than the first.
The second one's worse than the first.
Defend yourself.
I mean, the first one, I won't call them racist. That was definitely
you
a...
You did, though.
It was a racist post. I don't think the person writing it was a racist, nor do I think anybody at Surfer Magazine, for sure, I mean, who knows, but I would imagine are not racists. But that was undeniably a racist thing to say. To say Nigeria or Africa or whatever they say in the first one is associated with the darker parts of humanity is like, it's either racist, again, what I said, racist or wildly insensitive. Like, just silly. It's a silly
thing
to write.
Meaning dark, the word darker parts of humanity, darker, is associated with their skin tone? Is that what?
Because that's the only thing as far as... So they back it up. Nigeria, right? This place is Nigeria. Nigeria is the most robust economy in Africa. It's actually the African country. You know, it's really, of course, they have problems like any country has problems. And, you know, arguably some would say, you know, they have corruption or whatever. But, you know, who doesn't, quite frankly? Nigeria is not that bad a place. And so to paint the whole country... First, to say it's the darker parts of humanity, which, again, Nigeria doesn't have specific things in its history like slavery, or I don't know what that was supposed to be referring to. And then when they later, Surfer, you know, in the second post, when they tried to
you know, reword it with what? Yeah. With terrorism, or what do they say?
Militant conflict, terrorism, and kidnappings.
That's not what Nigeria is primarily known for. Yeah. And so to paint the country with that brush, like an entire country with a long history, right? Nigeria is, I mean, I think if I'm correct, I think it's been argued that civilization started in Nigeria, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, yeah, like it has ancient, ancient history all the way up to, you know, some whatever, like anything, and problems with industrialization, blah, 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 blah. But to paint it so quickly with that brush was to me, like, an absolutely silly thing to do. Darker parts of humanity was bad. Militant conflict, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, was way worse.
Yeah. See, I'm taking umbrage. I feel like your article saying that it was racist was just as bad as the original post was, where it's like, the darker parts of humanity, I did not read it all in association to their skin tone.
What did
and
you
I don't think
to?
That the writer, like, I think it was definitely a mischaracterization and a misunderstanding or a just ignorance about what Nigeria is known for.
Sure.
So maybe they just thought, like, oh, there is political corruption and militant in Africa at large.
Exactly.
So I'm going to apply that to Nigeria. And so I think that was a misstep and obviously mischaracterization. I don't think it was racist.
But that's, to me, sure, to think of, when you think of Africa, without any background knowledge, right? I'm sure the writer had no previous experience in Africa, had no understanding of Africa, has never looked at Africa other than from my, you know, perspective. And again, I'm not talking about like weird white privilege-y, whatever, but like it was a very ignorant thing to say about a place that by ignorant, I mean very thoughtless thing to say.
Of course. And maybe he heard something negative about the Congo at some point and then just applied that.
Nigeria.
So I agree with you. It was poorly worded and definitely a mischaracterization, but I didn't find it racist at all. And like applying the word darker parts of humanity to the skin tone, I was like, definitely the writer didn't mean that.
Sure, but that's the only way to take it.
The magazine meant that. No, it's not the only way to take it. I didn't take it that way at all. I just thought the Congo thing, you know what I mean?
Then you're more racist.
You're more racist. You're the racist one who applied skin tone to it. So no, but I'm bringing this up with an intention.
Yes.
Because I do think that it's time that we really need to expand our vocabulary, and I don't think that it's fair to just lob out the word racist, because I think that that actually dilutes the word. And for the people who actually hate other races, it now kind of diverts attention away from them and points it at this social media intern who doesn't actually have any racist bone in his body. You know what I mean?
But like, you're forgetting that we need clicks. And if I can put the word racist in a, I think the second post was Surfer Falls on Racist Sword, which was one of my favorite headlines. That aside from, I think at one point I had a headline of The Inertia Caught in Racist Intrigue, which is another one about
them. I'm sure slagging, I clicked.
Slagging Brazilians. But yeah. But
I let's actually dig in.
Sure.
I think we can all become, Beach Grit can become a better Beach Grit if you guys embrace this new direction of like, hey, there are actual racists out there. And then there's this other thing that's just insensitivity. And I don't know what the right word actually is. There's probably a better word for insensitivity. That is this thing where, like, you know, this person there's definitely not a racist because they don't
feel
that any other race is inferior. Turns out I reached out to the writer of that article.
He used to work for Beach Grit.
I know.
Did he feel bad about what I
feel terrible? He's like, I reached out to him. I actually talked to his brother because the writer himself.
I was surfing with the brother the other day.
Really?
The brother didn't look at me. So
they're hurt. Their feelings got hurt about the whole thing.
Should have.
So,
hey, don't you?
But he wasn't racist. So that's the thing. He's like, this is very low blow of Chaz, and I'm not protecting him at all.
Sure,
but like, I talked to his brother, and his brother was like, dude, honestly, my brother just wants to move past this whole thing. You guys probably shouldn't even talk about it on the podcast.
We're talking about it.
Yeah, of course we are. So, but he definitely didn't mean it. And I asked him three questions. I'll pull up the questions right now.
You did real like journalism research. Here. Yeah.
Dude, how about that? So I go, here's the three questions. I'm going to be meeting with Chaz in a short while. Did he, first of all, write that caption as the social media guy for Surfer? Did he write that caption? The answer to that was yes.
Sure.
Question number two, are you racist? And the answer to that was no. Question number three was, do you feel that Nigerians are inferior to other people?
Amazing.
The question was, the answer was, absolutely not.
Perfect.
What he meant to convey was, he was trying to condense that there's been kidnapping, some human trafficking, and other stuff that's been reported, which of course has been reported in America as well, and everywhere else around the world. And I go, of course, when I read the caption, the original caption, I understood it to mean that. I also understood it was poorly worded, and I wouldn't word my captions that way. But I understood what he meant to say by the article, and painting him with the racist brush, again, lumps him in with guys who are actually lynching other people. And I don't think that's fair.
Okay.
That's all.
But didn't we learn anything from the victory of Donald J. Trump? Have we not learned anything, David Lee Scales?
I've learned some things. I'm curious what you're
alluding
to.
What have you learned?
I'm learning not to apologize for anything.
Exactly. You double down. If Surfer would have said something even more racist after that, I would have stood up and applauded, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not really. Kind of, though. Because, like, okay, what I'm doing to... What's his name again? I forgot his name.
Let's just call him the Surfer Magazine social media manager.
I love... He did some great pieces for Beach Grit, some cute pieces. He's a nice guy. He's, like, genuinely...
Super nice guy. He's a listener to this show, which is the only reason I know him.
Sure. Great kid. Great kid.
Yeah.
But I feel good about this education that he has received right here.
He did get reprimanded.
Sure, of course he did, because it was a stupid thing to put out. It was a robustly stupid thing to put out on a big platform. He should be really careful. He should know you either have a native sense about what's appropriate or not. And the fact that he didn't have a native sense that referring to Africa and the darker parts of humanity in the same sentence was not the right way to go about that. Whatever with calling Nigeria, you know, for this point, like a corrupt, you know, culture, whatever.
Yeah.
Saying that even though I think to be uneducated about it, not saying that he's uneducated, but I'm sure he's uneducated about Nigeria.
Sure.
And to paint Nigeria with a broad brush of corruption and blah, 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 because it's Africa, to me is really, that's deeply problematic. And that's something that we should actually be talking about more. But
I agree.
For our purposes, okay. Learn a lesson and be careful with what you say. If you're going to be edgy, he wasn't trying to be edgy there, right?
Yeah.
He was trying to be sincere. Don't write that kind of stuff ever. Like, and if you don't learn that lesson now, then like, if you don't take your slap now from me, I'm doing you a favor, young man, and move on, then it would have bitten you in the butt later
down the road.
Yeah.
When it mattered.
Well, totally. If you were in another job.
I agree with you. I'm not saying that, like, you definitely, he didn't lose his job over it. There was nothing really bad that happened other than just like a little bit of public shaming.
Sure.
Which, by the way, I'm all for public shaming.
Sure.
And I think we need to bring it back.
Yeah.
Like, we've gotten away from shaming, and I think people have run rampant without it.
Totally.
So I'm totally okay with shaming. And you and I both get shamed because of this. We're sitting in a glass house by having this conversation.
Obviously. But the day that I write something as inappropriate as the darker parts of humanity in Africa, if I'm not being purposeful about, you know, my irony in it, then I hope that you and everyone else out there blows my house down.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Precisely. But what I'm saying, though, is that so I know or assumed when I read it, there's two things happening here, right? It's a funny story because it happened. Like, again, anything that happens and is live, like, it's not like it was an internal memo that went out to the Surfer staff about the darker parts of humanity in Africa that I took from the internal memo and broadcasted. It was their Instagram post from the day. They have 1.whatever million Instagram followers. That was out there. To me, that's public fodder. Like, it's I can comment now on this because this has been put out. If I shine a big spotlight on it, it's already out. It's not out to a limited amount of people. It's out to everyone that, you know, theoretically everyone that follows you. So, the most important part of this was me having fun. be the second part is, hey, kid, like, learn your lesson and watch what you say. Be careful with what you say, unless you're being purposefully, like, you know, unless you're purposefully poking the bear. And if you're purposefully poking the bear, C, double down like Donald J. Trump. Like, don't apologize. Don't do some mealy mouth backstep, which ends with a worse thing. Like, just say, I didn't mean to come out. Say, I didn't mean anything bad by it. And you're racist for thinking it. Or whatever. Right. It was locker room talk. Whatever. Right? Donald J. Trump it. And again, so those three things to this, to the specific kid, was either learn and adjust, or if you can't take it, then you don't belong here anyway, quite frankly.
Sure.
Like, and it's like, it's a cruel world. You and I have both been in for quite some time now, but I don't think that words really matter. I think words, I mean, you know, sometimes they do, but more often than not, words are play.
Yeah.
For me, they're play almost always. That's why I'm happy to go, you know, get vehemently adamant about backing some position only to double back and disavow it 2 days later.
30 minutes later, yeah, on the podcast.
Even so. Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and double down. Like, I don't think your article was wrong. I don't think his caption was wrong. I think you calling it racist was the only wrong part, because I think that racism requires
intent.
Two elements. Number one, intent. And I definitely don't think he would. And then secondly, action. You know what I mean? Like, you can think in your head, you can dream of setting fires all day long in your head and fantasize about where you will set those fires, but you're not a pyromaniac until you go set those fires.
See, I guess with racism, I disagree. I think passive racism is way more damaging than active racism.
But there was no passive racism in it. So
sure.
I think
there was, though.
No, well, okay, now let me... You said the darker part of humanity, associating that with skin tone, I feel that was applying a racism that was never there with passive or intentional or aggressive.
But I still think, though, the double down of that Nigeria is corrupt, like basically all Africa is corrupt.
So that's a different conversation. That's now a mischaracterization of the culture, but I don't think it's racist.
But it's race-based, I think. I mean, I think a lot of people think that why Africa is corrupt is because it's run by black people.
No.
Because it's black people. Sure.
No, sure. Dude. So the fact, I think also, when you start applying, like, you can't refer to any country in Africa as being darker because of their race or because of their skin tone, I feel like that's now racist. I don't think you should ever amend your language.
Oh, I agree. I mean,
for things like that.
I agree on that front entirely. And if you would have said the darker parts of Africa referring to their skin tone, that actually wouldn't have been racist, because then you're just making an objective observation.
Sure.
Their skin is darker than white people's skin.
Right? Do you remember the Otis Carey debacle?
Yeah, with who was the writer?
Oh my God.
It was
Nathan Myers?
It was Nathan Myers.
When he wrote Cro-Magnon.
Sure.
Brow?
Sure.
I was like, I could not believe that Nathan Myers got vilified over that.
Completely. And again, though, it was like, in context and in retrospect, it was a wildly inappropriate thing to write about Otis Carey, who is one of the very few, if not only, he's Aboriginal, right? Yeah.
Percentage.
Yeah, like a percentage.
50%
sure,
Aboriginal.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not like there's a bunch of Aboriginal surfers out there.
Right.
And so to describe, and again, I know Nathan Myers, love Nathan Myers. Clearly Nathan Myers did not mean anything racist by that. But it was horribly worded, right? And that wording should have been caught on down the line. Like, where, to me, and on Beach Grit, and this is maybe always playing with fire, but I like to play with fire, and so does Derek. It's fun to play with race. It's fun to play with sex. It's fun to play with...
kicking dogs.
Exactly. Kicking dogs, homosexuality. It's fun to, like, to tug on the strings that actually, you know, get people to react to stuff, but you got to be good at it. And I don't think I'm good at much. I think I'm good at knowing when something is really inappropriate and when something is amusingly inappropriate, and dancing that dance. And again, with the surfer thing, he wasn't doing any of those things, right? He was just making a pose that he thought was appropriate. But I hope, again, to his point and to your point about racism, like playing with racism, to me, it's everything is so, there's so much hyperbole, especially now post Charlottesville, all this, like racism and race is like the hottest fire that there ever could possibly be in this moment, which is also the perfect place to go and play. Because that's how you can get people to actually engage in stuff.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not taking any high road here and like, what? I was just starting a conversation. No, I was going low hanging fruit, clickbait fun at surface expense. But I do hope that the wonderful young man who wrote that caption took that and that it'll help craft him as a writer moving forward.
He did. And he lost sleep over it from what my conversation was with his brother. And, but I do think, the value to Beach Grit and the reason why I even, you know, why we're doing this kind of co-hosted podcast together is there's always relevance to a larger conversation. It's not just a conversation about like, oh, we need clickbait and we need to sell ad space. And so let's just write the word racist in the title. Like it, the bigger conversation is the use of the word racist.
Exactly.
You know?
Which I think you accurately, like totally appropriately put your finger on that. But all I'm trying to do at Beach Grit, right, in saying that it's racist is to play to the larger theme about how race is being and racism is being talked about in this day and age, right?
Yeah.
Where I can go sound the alarm about a completely more or less innocuous post. But that's what's happening across the board in culture, right? Like so many things are getting called sexist, racist, homophobic, da, 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 da. Some of them are exactly those things, right? Yeah. Which is, I mean, I think what I wrote is some things, all this stuff is layered onto the new, you know, it's a nuanced thing that's being written and people are just layering, you know, identity politic kind of stuff onto it. Sometimes the words are just straight up inappropriate. And
totally.
In this case, that was one of these.
It was inappropriate, but it wasn't racist.
Sure,
it was misguided, poorly worded, and actually a mischaracterization of the culture.
And if you look back at the post, racist was always in quotes, just like Donald Trump puts his
stuff. Was it really?
Yeah. I always put racist in quotes
just to
try to
quietly
emphasize.
Fine. We'll end that topic there. Our drinks are empty. Do we dare have another?
We go one more beer.
Oh,
yeah.
Perfect. Okay, one more beer and pee break.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're back. I'm going to close out the show with two segments. I actually am skipping over a bunch of notes that I had because I feel like 2 hours
we're
is
long.
Pushing the limits.
Yeah. I mean, that's really... Right. If people are... I mean, what are the two segments?
Well, I wanted to talk about... There's so much that's happened in Webland in terms of premium violence... Former's with Dane Reynolds.
What do you think about that?
It's phenomenal, dude.
How do you think of that as a business?
I think I was so critical about Former as a clothing brand when they first launched.
Art installation, it's gorgeous.
Yes, agreed. But I'm like, if they're selling clothing, I know that I'm not the demographic, but I still think objectively, like this is not going to make sense. And now I'm thinking twice about it. I think I might have been wrong initially. Like, I think actually the clothes are actually, they're kind of cool.
Sure,
like,
sure. I mean,
there's details in the clothing, the zipper pull, internal printed collar tag. Like, some of those details, I'm like, actually, that's super cool.
Yeah.
And it's subtle. And like, I'm not flashy. I always wear just like one tone, no graphics or whatever. And actually, some of the graphic stuff on their clothing I don't like, but I'm like, the color scheme is exactly what I wear. The cut works oftentimes. The details are subtle, but like super cool. I like it.
Yeah.
I'm starting to kind of like it.
Former. Try to buy something.
Why? It's sold out?
Oh. No. I mean, I just heard somebody tried to buy a t-shirt, like really wanted a t-shirt and got looped around so much in like, it's not an easy process. Maybe they fixed it. And I did, like, I wasn't even talking about that. But buy something and wear it. Don't try. Yeah. Buy something.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't really buy clothes.
I mean, how much is a Former shirt?
Like, a t-shirt was, like, $25 to $30.
Yeah.
All right, so okay. Roll the dice on
that. Yeah, buy a t-shirt and, okay. and put it on, walk around and see if you feel like, it'd be like surfing an ASIM, right?
Yeah, all right, I'll do it. As due diligence for the listener,
yeah.
I will do it. I also think they're doing a phenomenal job directing attention. Like, that's where they've had more success, I think, than a lot of these other brands that we're talking about, where they were going to do a release party for this new video, Premier Violence, and for this new line of clothing in L.A., and I actually RSVP'd, and I was going to go, and I just decided not to go. But I RSVP'd, so of course I gave them my email address by RSVPing, and now I'm on their mailing list. So they've sent me two or three emails this week trying to sell their clothing. But then when they dropped that edit, so the release party for that edit was that Friday night, and then I think 3 or 4 days later on Tuesday, they released the edit on their website. I stopped what I was doing, pulled out my iPad, and I watched it for the 17 minutes, and I think all of us did. And then all of us took to social media to discuss it.
Yep.
I saw Dane Reynolds post advertising the video, and I see Jay Davies and all these pro surfers commenting like, hey, that last air was amazing. So I'm like, whoa, they've shifted everybody's attention in a way that Quicksilver definitely doesn't do.
Totally.
Even the WSL doesn't do. And so I'm like, wow, they're actually doing a phenomenal job of, number one, capturing email addresses.
Sure.
And then, of course, attention.
I mean, and part of it, though, is I think Dane Reynolds is still the core surfer's core surfer.
Exactly.
Like, Dane Reynolds is your favorite surfer still. And there's some.
I wasn't sure if he was until I watched this.
Sure.
And then he still is.
Totally. You're reminded that Dane Reynolds still matters in surfing.
Totally.
And he may not be the most, you know, anymore the most prolific. Former as a business is probably not the neatest, cleanest, you know, money-making thing. But in terms of getting the core surf attention, like, I'll tip my hat to those guys, to, you know, Craig and Dane and Austin Gillette and whoever else is involved in that brand all day long.
Yeah.
Like, good on them.
They've done a great job. Yeah. And there's obviously a huge learning curve involved with, like you said, making it a neat business.
Sure.
And I was super critical at first, but
yeah,
they're doing a lot of things right.
It was fun to make fun of for a minute.
It was, yeah. Have you looked at the clothing? Do you have an opinion?
I haven't seen this. I haven't seen the Premier Violence collection, because that's what they're doing, right? They're releasing a video and a collection that's tied to that video.
Also smart.
Sure. So it's not like Rourke Revival, who would go on a trip and then release clothing based on that trip. It's around a video. Totally brilliant. The only thing I would think, as a in the content game myself, it's really hard to keep that pace up of content production, where Dane and Craig probably have, you know, a good 5 years in them surfing wise left, maybe Dane less, but I think it'll behoove former to bring on kind of the next level and do next level edits starting, you know, tomorrow.
Right. Is Dane going to be able to do a bigger air in the next edit than he did in these edits?
He might. I would have never.
Probably not, though. You know?
I mean, I would have never thought he was going to do a bigger air in this edit than he did.
Right.
You know,
good point.
In the last time. Like,
now that he has a kid and.
Sure. Like, who knows?
Like, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't. And maybe Dane will be like, okay, fuck airs, turns. And do turns so big that we all stop and say, you know, whoa.
Is he going to do a bigger turn than the one he did at Holly Eva in a contest 3 years ago?
Again, I would have never thought this last edit that he was going to be doing those airs, right? Did you?
No, of course not. So that was the topic that I was not going to bring up. So let's move on to... Yeah. I want to close out this show with Cougar Curran and then Barrel or Nah.
Wait a second. Okay. Cougar Curran, I think we have to change.
Okay.
Because as a linguist...
Yeah.
It's come to mean.
I noticed that you've been.
It's come to mean
wording it differently.
It's come to mean something else.
Okay.
The population takes it. I feel as this is either this thing that both do.
I know.
Is either cool or not. Right.
Yeah.
So people are taking Curran as cool and Kook as not cool, and so it's the same basic idea. But you, being benevolent, were not attaching value to the thing. You were saying that only Kooks or Currens do this.
Exactly.
People want it as a question. They want, is this Kook or Curran? it's what they both do, but they want value judgment on it. So what you and I need to do now, the people have spoken, what you and I need to do is take puka shell necklaces and say, that's what kooks or currens do. Is it cool or is it not? You and I have to add, that's what's missing, is a layer of value judgment. That's okay. What people want. So
okay.
That's what, because that's what the people are doing. The people are doing this and making value judgments based on it.
Yeah.
Right? Which, I wear a rash guard. Am I a kook or a curren? So they're
right.
Like, even though that's not the question, the question is, if you're wearing a rash guard, you are a kook slash curren.
Like, that's, no, in my mind, it's like
they're a kook.
Yeah, totally. If you aren't doing the air reverse or without a full rotation air in this, then you're just a kook.
Sure.
So you can't wear a rash guard unless you're on the WSL winning heats
or a kook. Except it's the middle guy who can actually surf who's wearing a rash guard is trying to say, which one am I?
I'm going, you've already self-identified as a kook.
Sure, if you ask me. But we're gonna have to help.
I agree.
Not help, but we're gonna add value judgment now. Yeah. And everybody can disagree too with our value judgment. Sure. So, but that's the thing. So it's going to be kook or curren. These are things that kooks and currens do. Now, is this, what's the value judgment on this?
And by the way, just to drive the point home for anybody who hasn't listened to a previous episode, meaning there's nobody in the middle tier of surfers. There's no intermediate surfers that do these things. There's a few things in surfing that only novices do and experts do, and nobody in the middle ground. Yep. Chaz and I aren't doing these things. Only the beginners and only the best surfers in the world. So the archive of this category is a GoPro on the nose of your board pointing directly at you, rash guards, booties with trunks, puka shell necklaces, and now I have a couple of new ones for you, Chaz.
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Now, here's what's weird about this. When I originally pitched this concept 3 or 4 episodes ago, I was like, I'm probably going to get one of these every 6 months.
Sure, because
it's pretty rare.
It seems like it. When you brought it up the first time, I thought it was rare.
Dude, now I've got 3 every episode.
That's it's pretty
remarkable.
Amazing. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 3, and you can actually disagree that they aren't, but I'm pretty convinced that these 3 things are. Playing a ukulele on a surf trip.
Yeah.
This came from a listener.
Yeah, that's brilliant, because McCoy Rothman does it, and McCoy Rothman is definitely not a kook.
I think Jack Johnson does it.
He's not
a
kook.
Tom Curran does it.
A lot of surfers.
I think Kelly Slater does it.
Yep.
I think Donovan Frankenreiter does it.
Yep.
And then absolute Barneys do
it. All the Barneys do it.
Every guy who shows up to Fiji who wants to get laid doesn't get any set waves that day,
but brings
then
ook.
Goes back to the bar at night, orders a pina colada, pulls out the ook.
Play somewhere on the rainbow.
And the guys who got barreled all day long are looking at that guy going, wait a second, and the women are fawning.
Yep. Yep.
Right?
Yeah. What do you... Okay, so do you like it?
I think it's so accurate. The listener sent it to me, and I was like, oh my God. I don't know any, like, actual intermediate surfer that I would associate with who's ever
pulled out of you.
He would be embarrassed to even pack it for the
So do you... Now, let's put a value judgment. Is that cool or not?
Definitely not cool.
Yeah, it's not cool.
Definitely
even
not cool.
Even for Makuakai. Like, there's no, you know, and maybe this is just my racism coming out. The only appropriate time for ukulele is in Hawaii, and the only place appropriate for ukulele is Duke's Barefoot Bar.
You have to be touching sand.
Yes.
Okay. I like it.
I don't like the uke exported.
Ook.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like it exported.
I
like it as a Hawaiian thing. I don't like it as a surf thing.
I agree. Completely. Adam Carolla has this solid joke where he's like, there's a perfect size of a guitar for getting laid.
Yeah.
And it is the electric guitar.
Sure.
But you look at that and you go, oh, well, if that guy's getting laid, bigger's got to be better. So then you get the mariachi band with a guy with a giant guitar not getting laid at all. And then you go the other way and you got the ukulele guy not getting laid at all. So you got to have a middle-sized guitar to
get the electric guitar.
Exactly. There you go. Acoustic is the same size.
Sure.
So there's some crossover if you want to get laid.
Totally.
But I like it.
Yeah.
I'm like, man.
Adam Carolla's right on that one. Yeah.
It's not dumb.
Yeah.
So, all right. Cougar Kern number one. Cougar Kern number two. The Gath helmet.
Brilliant.
Have you ever seen an intermediate surfer wearing a helmet?
No.
Never.
I've only seen people getting barreled over shallow reef passes.
Tom Carroll.
Or little
Liam
kids.
Liam McNamara.
Little kids.
Exactly.
Like just
learning.
Learning in the shore break.
Yeah.
Like I'll put my daughter in a Gath. I surf with her right now, but when it's time to put her on her own board, I will guarantee her in a Gath, and she will not be a current when she's first starting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you get the, let's say, the brain surgeon from Hoke Hospital who, yep, like deals with head trauma all day but wants to learn how to surf.
Yep.
And he's like, well, I'm going to go, but this is dangerous and these are projectiles, so I'm going to go ahead and get a helmet before I go learn how to surf.
Smart guy.
That's one guy on one end, yep, of the spectrum. Nobody wears that helmet until you get to Tom Carroll.
Totally.
Surfing Pipeline.
Would you wear – what would be the situation where you would wear a Gath?
If I, tomorrow morning, endured a head trauma while surfing –
You would put,
and then I spent, let's say, 3 months out of the water. That's my over-under.
Yep.
If I spent 2 months out of the water, the next session, I wouldn't wear a helmet.
Yeah.
If I spent 3 months and 1 day out of the water,
your helmet,
lamenting, then I would show up the next session with a helmet, and I would venture a guess that I would spend 8 sessions with that helmet, and on the 9th session, I would forget the trauma and go helmetless.
Does a Gath helmet feel nice?
No.
Imagine
duck
one?
Diving.
But maybe it's like aerodynamic, hydrodynamic.
No.
You sure?
I think
my hair is not hydrodynamic.
When it's wet, it is.
I feel that I need to buy a Gath helmet and take it out for a spin and come back and report on not only how it feels to surf in, but also the looks you get in the lineup.
Yeah, you just self-identified as a kook.
I've never worn one. Do you feel, though, maybe they would think this guy's pulling in so deep at D Street?
That exactly, at D Street.
That he is, like, packing D Street barrels.
Okay.
He needs a Gath.
Yeah, go for it, dude.
Okay.
I encourage you.
Gath? Do you have a Gath contact?
No, I don't.
Could Gath be a sponsor for
the
show?
Are they still in business?
For sure.
Okay.
There's a lot of kooks.
Yeah, there are. A lot more kooks than there are Kerns. So this third one is relevant to a recent episode I did, riding an egg-shaped surfboard.
I saw your Instagram post. Who was riding that egg?
Devin Howard.
And he was ripping.
Dude, the guy rips.
He was surfing very well on an egg.
He did a 30-minute soliloquy on the podcast advocating for the egg.
I need to go back and listen.
I know.
But eggs are shitty.
I was tripping, dude.
Eggs are crap. Why do you surf an egg? What's the point of egg is for when you can't surf anymore.
That's
right?
What I thought.
But so no matter what Devin Howard said,
you and I are conflating the word egg for fun board.
Sure, isn't it the same thing?
No.
What's a fucking egg? A short longboard?
The egg? No, it is a kind of a short longboard, but it has high performance characteristics.
Okay, then it's a fun board. That's what a fun board is.
No. The fun board is a shortened longboard with hyper rocker to prevent you from purling when you're learning how to take off on whitewash. The egg has like bottom contour, 2+1 setup in the fins. Like it actually, and it's designed for shoulder high to head high surf, like, and bigger.
Bullshit.
Dude.
Did you
gotta back listen.
It? Did you back Devin Howard's in defense
I
of the
listened
egg?
While I was sitting on the mic. I was like, this guy's such a kook. But, like, I know he shreds, and, like, I surfed with him that morning. Like, he surfs good, but, like, he doesn't shortboard, you know? So I'm, like, creating these value judgments.
Sure, sure.
And then I listened back to the episode, and I was like, shoot, actually, that fits a lot of my holes in my quiver that I don't actually have.
When are you going to fucking ride an egg?
Head high days at Point Breaks.
I don't know. I want to ride an asymmetric board. I want to ride a puddle jumper. I want to ride anything but an egg.
Yeah. You got to listen, dude.
He's so wrong.
You got to listen.
The day you paddled out on a head high Point Break day, you would have said, why the hell? And this is Devin Howard's problem. Devin. Fucking Devin Howard. You would have said, I would be having so much more fun on any one of my normal shortboards right now.
I'm going to argue for Devin. When was the last time you paddled out on a shortboard and surfed to what you thought was your potential?
It was super depressing, but I was in Salina Cruz, Point Break, head high, start of June, a couple months ago.
I remember.
Yeah, it was, wasn't firing, but it was like, for me, it was like funnest size ever. And I surfed to my potential, which is, again, ain't great. But I was doing my best turns and everything on a shortboard. If I would have been on a fucking 7-foot egg, I would have been stabbing myself in the neck with coral on the way back out.
If it's hollow, maybe not. Maybe it wasn't hollow. Ride the egg. Oh,
was I mean, it was hollow on the takeoff, but the like, it was steep as it ran along the inside section. It was steep, but it wasn't barreling.
Yeah.
But what the fuck am I going to do on an egg?
You're going to catch waves deeper than you ever would have on your shortboard. So you're going to sit out back with the better guy, with the longboarders or whoever, catch waves like you never caught them before, and everything is going to be drawn out more. So I feel like while I want to surf like Joel Parkinson on my shortboard, I never do. After I turn 22, I've not ever like surfed to the kind of sensitivity and like...
That's not fine true.
I haven't. I bogged 50% of my turns.
You're surfing better now than you did at 22.
No, I'm not.
Were you good at 22?
Way better than I am now.
See, dude. I wasn't good at 22. Maybe that's my...
All I know is, dude, I'm bogging nowadays on my shortboard. And so that allows your drawing out turns. Like all the style implements you're able to kind of do with more foam.
You know where you're going.
It's embarrassing. Yes, I know where
you're
going
to... Pearl Jam XM, an egg, and the coffin.
I am accepting my fate, dude.
No, let's just stick.
You want me to go Derek Riley style?
Let's all go Derek Riley style. XM hip hop, progressive shortboards, ripping. Fucking Devin Howard. I want to go to
the guy surf. Are you going to criticize? Like, look at him surfing. You can't criticize it.
He rips on his egg, but I don't want to do that.
I kind of do, dude.
On your Instagram, video you posted of Devin Howard.
Yeah.
He looked like he was having so much fun, right? He was ripping his fucking egg.
Right.
The only thing I thought, what if Devin Howard was on an actual surfboard? How much more fun would he be having? Yeah, that's what I mean by actual surfboard. He would have been having, and I'm not talking about a JS, you know, thinly glass. I'm talking about anything like under six. I mean, how tall is Devin? Is Devin a tall man?
Yeah, six foot, 6'1".
Okay, sure. Okay, so I'm going to say if Devin was on a proper 5'10", a little bit wider in the nose, like a traditional kind of modern everyman shortboard, Devin would have been shredding that wave.
Yeah.
He was having fun on his fucking egg.
To answer your question, I think that the egg allows for margin of error.
Yeah.
So after you turn a certain age, it's kind of like if you... slightly let off the gas a little bit on a bottom turn, you either bog or don't get the projection into the lip that you were hoping to get. And so the egg allows you to let off the gas a little bit and still blast the lip.
I'm holding here.
You're not willing to do it.
I hate the egg. I loathe the egg.
Yeah.
Like when
who's having more fun surfing, you or him?
Me. Because in my mind, I'm still a surfer and he's given up.
Mm.
He is stuck the fork in, and it is done.
Yeah.
That bird is cooked, Devin Howard.
Where
does Devin Howard live?
Cardiff. You guys are neighbors, dude.
I'm gonna go knock on his door and just say, fucking Devin Howard, and punch him in the face.
I think this warrants a podcast, Devin versus Chaz.
Oh, for sure.
Well, let's do it alphabetically. Chaz versus Devin.
How's okay, that? Yeah, perfect. Even better.
All right, so... Kook or Curran, though, like you only see Kooks riding eggs and Devin riding the egg. You don't see anybody in the middle. I've literally never seen in my entire surfing life.
I've only seen
an intermediate surfer riding an egg.
Yeah, exactly. Devin.
Devin's the only Curran.
He rips. Devin rips. But why is Devin doing that to himself?
I don't know.
Do you think Devin would not rip as good on a board?
Great question.
If I gave Devin, I have like a. Little Nuggy. What are the Mini Simmons, right?
Yeah.
Devin would rip a Mini Simmons.
He rides fish,
yeah,
longboards, and mid-lengths. I've never seen him ride a pointy-nosed.
Can we get Devin on a pointy-nosed shortboard and get a video and just see?
I would love to.
Yeah.
Would love to.
On a good day.
Okay.
Like a good day on a proper shortboard. And he can't kook it on purpose. Like, of course he's got to really say.
Yeah, of course. Of course. What if he has integrity. He would.
Sure,
he would,
sure. Yeah. Well, what if it just opened Devin's eyes? Like, what if Devin said, amazing. I was blowing it my whole life. I was on this shit.
Dude, I would love to have that conversation with him. The eye-opening conversation. All right. So those are my Cuckoo Currents, barrel or nah.
Yeah.
This segment started as you giving me life advice.
Yep.
And now I've kind of broken it into 50% like surf-related advice, 50% life advice. Barrel or nah.
Yes.
Changing robes.
Oh, okay. I wrote about this on Beach Grit.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that one.
Oh, yeah. No, I went down to surf D Street again. D Street is the only place I surf these days. I'm sorry.
Listeners who want to
if you want to get into conversation, just go on down to D Street. I forgot a towel, and I was sitting there thinking, what do I do? And so I thought, screw it, and got full nude and changed. It was into trunks because I loathe any wetsuit until it gets really genuinely cold. So it was naked from jean to trunk. The first time I went to Australia ever, Derek and Sam from Stab Magazine, Derek, partner of Beach Grit, Sam, owner of Stab, picked me up at the airport. We went surfing. Derek naked changed, and I thought, oh, that's how people change in Australia.
You saw his wiener?
Yeah, totally. And I thought, ooh, this is shocking, but this is just the way they do things here. When I did it myself just days ago, I thought, I'm never bringing a towel again. I mean, unless I needed for some other reason. I'm not bringing a towel to change. So I naked changed, feeling my manhood, just swinging it out there, right?
Liberating.
Completely liberating. When I came back up the stairs to go home, there was a bunch of people in the changing ponchos and everything, and I thought, you fucking pussies. You are ashamed of your manhood. Just let it, we should all let it hang out. If you're not going to let it hang out, then just do the deck change with the towel. A man should not buy a changing poncho. No barrel at all.
Okay. I like it. I've been considering purchasing a changing poncho for some time.
See?
All right.
Don't buy it. Don't buy the egg. Like, stay young. Forever young.
Okay. I like it, Rod Stewart. The problem in California with your nude policy is you will get arrested.
Of course.
And or have to register as a sex offender for the rest of your life.
Like, all you have to be is kind of careful. I mean, how hard is it to spot a fucking cop car down the street?
Not that hard.
Yeah, you just be semi careful about doing it, and you don't really advertise it. Like, you know, you don't go running around in front of the mom and the kids.
15 seconds.
Sure. Like, from jeans to trunks, I even got caught at the heel of my jean. Like, tug off.
Don't do the tug off while you're changing.
I mean,
save that.
I do, but no, I was liberated. I was a liberated man. I could do whatever I want in those streets. Yeah, take the streets back. The people need to take
light a candle, put it through a little paper plate, and own, take back the street.
Own your masculinity.
So nudity is liberating. So I grew up. You and I are similar age, but not exactly the same, which is why I lean on you for life advice. I grew up in an era where there were no showers in the high school gym locker room.
You didn't shower?
No. So the showers actually were in the gym, but in physical education, we didn't actually have to use them.
Really?
So we would go to PE class, change into our PE clothing at our locker with a towel,
sure,
and never have to get in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like everybody who came before me has a comfort with nudity
that
my kind of generation didn't. I'm 35, for the record. I was born in 1981. For listeners who are trying to put this into context. So I've had a few instances with, like you're talking about, where I've had to come to terms with.
Sure.
I was at a day spa, Burke Williams.
Yep.
And it's like, I'm getting a massage at 2, but I showed up at noon to use the amenities. And, man, I want to go into the sauna, and everybody is naked.
Sure.
What do I do here?
You get naked.
You know what I mean? And if I go naked, you got to just fully embrace it and just own it. And like, hey, guys, here.
It's like the darker parts of Africa. If you double down, you're good to go. I feel you can make people, just not pay attention if you just own it, right? It's when you're hedging, when you're awkward about it, that's when trouble happens.
Yeah.
You just own it.
I subscribe to your belief, and I'm at a phase in my life now, certainly around the house,
who cares?
The mornings. Oh, it's way better.
Sure.
Dude. It's like surfing leashless.
Who cares?
You just feel liberated. Exactly.
You're free.
You relinquish all expectation. Yeah, it's better. Okay,
these cool. Pipes are free.
So changing poncho/robes, that's a nah.
It's a definite okay. Nah.
Barrel or nah number two, peeing in public pools.
That's a good question.
Thank you.
I'm really nah on that one.
Hmm.
But I don't know why. Fundamentally, it shouldn't matter, right? There's enough chlorine and stuff in there, and who cares? It's your pee, and who cares? You know, like I am not a greater common good kind of guy. I don't care about the greater common good. So if it's my pee, I don't care about sitting in my pee, right? Why not do it? But I feel there's something really fundamentally, and I don't believe in karma either. So I don't know why I don't. Maybe I need to reevaluate and start peeing in public pools.
If we were having this question off air, no microphones, how would you answer it? Have you peed in public pools, dude?
I mean, when I was a little kid, yeah, but not. So I go to public pools all the time, right? I have a young daughter.
Palm Springs.
Yeah, I mean, and so I'm honestly every other day at a public pool, and I don't. And yeah, I don't know. I need to revisit because I don't believe in any of the things that would make me not. And so I've got to figure out why I don't pee in a public pool. Do you?
Yes, I pee in public pools, for the record, and I'll get into that. Maybe it's an issue for you where you're not actually in there long enough to have to pee. And so
a good hour. I mean, it's a okay. good, yeah.
Have you ever excused yourself?
Yes,
and
yeah.
And then got back
in. Sure, sure. I'll pee in the bushes or whatever even.
Yeah, right? See, I think there's a lot of things that we all do that none of us would admit to, like
yeah.
texting while driving or whatever, that it's like, no, you would never, ever do that, except we all do it.
Sure.
And peeing in public pools, I was with my dad this last weekend, and he excused himself from the pool to go pee, and I was looking at him going, huh, I just peed 3 minutes ago
yeah.
without telling you about
yeah.
it. Like, and I'm not proud of it, even though I'm talking about it publicly. I'm not proud of it. Like, I didn't announce it to him in that moment, but I'm going, dude, I don't know why I can even justify this in my mind, except that I think it's diluted enough to, and it's also sterile,
sure.
like scientifically.
Sure.
Like, it's not going to hurt anybody.
I know.
I'll take it a step further, actually, only because we've had multiple cocktails, or one cocktail and two beers. Public restrooms. I go into public restrooms and pee. I will not wash my hands
oh, sure.
in the public restroom because
you're only touching your own
my junk, which yeah. is the cleanest thing in
Being
that
public
restroom. If I touch the faucet
you're
of the public restroom,
totally.
That's the filthiest thing possible. And if I touch the handle, so I'll pee, not wash, grab a towel, a paper towel, and use that on the handle.
Sure.
So as not to contaminate anybody else. But by the way, I'm the cleanest thing in this room. So I just feel like I'm just like there's no morality. There's no it's all
no.
science. It's like this is pee is sterile. It's so diluted. This is just practical. I'm such a pragmatist or practical that this makes sense to me.
Why don't I pee in a pool?
Pee in the next pool you go in.
Well, I feel as liberated as I did changing nude at D Street.
You need to start pissing in pools, dude.
Is pee really good?
It's not good. It's not bad, though. It's sterile.
Neutral.
Yeah.
The pH, whatever. Nobody's getting sick from pee.
You could drink pee. You won't get sick.
Okay.
There you go.
I like it.
It just saved you.
Oh, but except for, maybe that's it. Maybe it's when you go see your dang son or daughter take mouthfuls of public pool water and spit it out like a fountain. Because that's what happens every time
I go
swimming.
It does.
And that affects your... I didn't do it before I had a kid either, but I don't really think I was in public pools. I mean, you know, hotel pools or whatever, but not like public pools.
Yeah.
But now seeing the way she swims, I'm not about to pee in her mouth, right? Which is essentially what I'd be doing because she is
letting strangers do it.
She is drinking that entire
pool. She's not drinking it. She's putting it in her mouth and spitting it out.
Yeah, but she's like her stomach is so full of water when she leaves.
Yeah, so again, it's sterile and it's not going to hurt her. It hasn't hurt her yet. Does she go home and get sick?
No. I mean, she has a stomach ache often, but just from drinking too much pool water.
Yeah, chlorine. That's chlorine. Sure. I think that's the chlorine is the culprit there.
Yeah, for sure. I don't blame other people's pee
yeah,
on that, no. on her stomach ache.
Yeah, so and honestly, like, I don't have a daughter, so can't really criticize you. But I'm just saying, like,
It's okay for her to go out and get her knee skinned. It's okay for her to get germs.
Of course. I don't mind the germs.
This falls into that category for me.
I guess it's just me peeing in her mouth.
Don't think of it that way. You're taking it to a different level, dude. I'm not taking it. Like, I'm just saying from a scientific standpoint.
It's not bad.
Zero issue.
Okay.
I'm a pragmatist.
I'm going to try it.
Zero issue.
I can't try it. I feel a real block here.
All right. Well, barrel or not, peeing in pools. I need your. Need to slam the gavel.
I'm going
to
say nah, but I want to open it to the floor because if people listening, pee pool. If people out there can convince me to, I want to pee in a pool. I have nothing against it. I don't know why I'm against it.
I'll Instagram it. And we'll have everybody weigh in.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thing is, dude, nobody's honest.
For this
one, I'd say 99% of the listeners right now have peed in pools.
Sure, of course.
And then
they have.
All of them are going to chime in on Instagram and be like, you're disgusting.
No, let's see. Right, okay, let's see. Okay, listeners, be honest.
Totally. Pee honest.
Yeah, pee honest.
Pee pool honest. All right, barrel or not, number three, self drawn artwork on a surfboard.
It was barrel the first time Dane Reynolds did it, for Dane Reynolds to do it. Ever since then, nah. I don't like it.
Have you ever done it?
No. Of course. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I never did it myself. I wrote a sponsor's logo. And by sponsor, I mean Yemeni Airlines, who paid for tickets in Yemen. I wrote Yemeni Airlines on one board.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Because they were going to be hyped on the...
In permanent marker?
Yeah, whatever we had at the room. Yeah. And a buddy wrote, like... an Arabic poem on his surfboard to look good. But yeah, nah.
Yeah. It's a straight out nah.
Yeah.
All right. By the way, I've had this in my notes for the last two shows and it's going to get bumped into the next show because we don't have time. I need you to tell me about Yemen.
Oh yeah.
So the question will be, tell me everything I need to know about Yemen.
Yeah.
Because you've been writing a bunch of articles about it.
Yemen.
I know that you're, it's important. Did you say Yaman?
Yeah, man.
It is important, and I've intentionally not read the articles because I thought it would be better to have the conversation on air.
Perfect.
Save it for the next show.
Perfect.
Okay.
Done.
Barrel or not, number four, this is the closing segment of the show, saying I love you to a male friend.
Total barrel. I just signed off with Steve Sherman, famous surf photographer. Talk to him. Hey, Steve, love you. And then you get the pause, and love you too, man. It's beautiful.
Wait, did you do it vocally or through text?
Vocally. But either way, it's great.
On the phone or in person?
On the phone, but I do them both. I love the love you to male friends in particular.
Or because you want to make them uncomfortable?
To male acquaintances. No, it's just like why, like a lot like the darker parts of Africa, I feel love is a word that's not used enough. And so, like, I love Steve Sherman. Right? I mean, love what he does, love his personality, he's a great guy, so why not sign off with love you, right?
You're breaking down barriers, dude.
Yeah, well, and to me, also, per you and your single status, I feel that men may, or maybe not even men, maybe men and women, make the word love to mean this thing. Love is great, right? Love is beautiful, but, like, if you're not going to be free, like, how many girls... David Lee Scales, have you told I love you to?
Dude, not only is that a great question, it is a super relevant question that I had with a girl recently.
Perfect.
That I say I love you to.
Yes.
I would say 5 or 6.
See, so you're a lover.
Dude, five I love them intensely.
Of course.
Yes.
See? And to make I love. Don't like I don't feel like I'm by telling Steve Sherman I love him and then my daughter that I love her and my wife that I love her, I don't feel like I'm deluding any of them. I feel love is just, it's great, right? Like,
yes.
And I clearly love my wife and daughter more than I love Steve Sherman. But by telling Steve Sherman I love him doesn't dilute, and it doesn't dilute up the chain. Where I feel somehow people feel the diluting principle that just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That love is not a finite thing, and
right.
It's not a
so true,
and it's also not a singular thing, right? So I can love Steve at a super minor fun level.
Yeah,
it does not take away from loving daughter or wife.
Right. I'm
all about, and particularly male friends. Like, I think you can confuse I mean, if you're heterosexual or whatever, you can confuse your love partner that, or the person you're crushing on by telling them you love them too early. I see that, you know, vaguely there should be maybe a little more care.
With, yes, with your intimate relationship.
Precisely.
Yes.
But with man on man, I will say I love you to almost anyone in the surf industry, including the poor young surfer boy that I... whose career I destroyed.
At Surfer Magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs that, by the way.
Yeah.
You need to mend that fence. Do you know why I'm asking you this question?
No.
Okay. Last time we recorded was at Album Surf in San Clemente, and as we were leaving, there was a stairwell, and it was like we parted ways, and we couldn't see one another.
Yeah.
And as you turned to the corner, and I didn't have a visual contact on you, I was like, "All right, dude, see you later." And you shouted out, "You're like, all right, love you." And I already had a thank you chambered.
Yeah.
So you said, "Love you," and I go, "Thank you."
Yeah.
And I was just like, "Oh, shoot, that was already chambered. I didn't mean to say thank you to I love you." And then I was forced to assess the I love you, where I was like, all right, 98% of your and my time together has been on the air. So I don't really know each other enough to like really feel a proper love the way that I might define it.
Sometimes I think about calling you and then I stop because I want to keep it at the 98%.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
I only want to talk to you on the air.
Totally. Yeah. I actually agree with that. So then I was like, all right, so that I love you came from one of two categories. It either came accidental, like I had my thank you chambered. He had the I love you chambered as if he was talking to his wife. And so that came out accidentally.
No.
Or option number two is he uses it, you know, just like all the time for acquaintance relationships, in which case I'm cool with either scenario. My thank you actually was so silly, and now I was actually rushing to the bathroom, so I was peeing, analyzing the whole thing, going, God damn it, that was so silly. Like, thank you, that is not the right thing to say. Like, what? But... again, reconsidering all of my male relationships in my life and then going, dude, I do love Grant.
Sure.
Why don't I tell Grant that I love him? Well, because he might not be comfortable with that. Well, maybe I should address that. Maybe I should have that conversation with Grant. So,
I mean, I don't use it all the time. I use the I love you to male acquaintances or people, males that I know, who I genuinely, like at a deep, genuine level, enjoy. And I genuinely, deeply enjoy these conversations, right? Like, whether or not J.P. Curry likes them or other people like them, right? Like, is vaguely immaterial to me. I genuinely enjoy these conversations.
J.P. Curry hates them.
He doesn't like them. He gets mad.
Have you ever had a personal conversation
with him? No. But I love J.P. Curry, too.
Yeah. So J.P. Curry, for the listeners, is a troll who gives us a hard time. I've had quite a few one-on-one interactions with him through email.
Yeah.
And I value his insights.
Sure, me too.
Yeah.
I wanted to hire JP to come over to Beach Grit if we could have. Yeah, I did.
Did you offer him?
Yeah, I did.
And declined?
It was right when Rory Parker left, and JP on the message boards was really defending Rory, and then emailing me, asking me, hey, like, is there an opportunity here, an opening? Which made me genuinely appreciate JP's like the cutthroat, like totally propping a guy up here and trying to steal, you know, at that point, well, I mean, it would have been stealing his job, but like really, you know, doing something underhanded here. And I really appreciated that in JP. And so, yes, told him, man, there'd be almost no writer out there. Or not no writer, but I would gladly have you here. And his price tag was too high. Yeah, but I would still...
Amazing.
Yeah. But I would still...
He priced himself out of the market.
He priced himself out, of Beach Grit's market. But...
he overvalued himself.
He did. But JP, though, the things I read from him, and it's not a lot, it doesn't seem like his production is... his output is that great anymore, or at least in surf it isn't. But I genuinely enjoy him, and I genuinely enjoy when he comes on and trolls. I always think there's value to what he says, right? Like, he's right. I think a lot of his criticism of this show for what he's saying like, I don't know, right? Because it's that this is a completely subjective value judgment. JP's opinion is totally valuable for JP, and maybe it's valuable for a ton of people. The proof is in the pudding. So if people are not really listening or downloading or whatever, then JP's right. If they are, and enjoy the, what time are we at right now?
2 hours and 40 minutes. Let's keep it going.
Okay.
Set a record.
If they are enjoying the 2 hours and 40 minutes of you and I blathering back and forth, then, right, that's what it is. So yeah. It's too early for me to know if JP is right, but JP may be right. This may be dog shit.
So JP has been a listener of Surf Splendor since the very beginning. Do you have to get out of here? Do you want to take that?
I can pause it.
Good. All right. He's been a listener to Surf Splendor since the very beginning and has actually provided me some pretty interesting insights over the years that have helped craft the direction of the show. And so some listener commented on Instagram after our last show, and they're like, oh, looks like you got your first troll. That's like a sign that you've actually arrived. And I replied to that Instagram comment publicly, and I was like, it's actually unfortunate. Like, I actually value JP's insight over the years, and him saying that he's not going to listen anymore, I'm bummed about that, and I would love to keep him as a listener, but I'm not going to amend what I think has value to the greater public. And by the way, the greater public signs off on what you and I have been doing. In terms of what I do with Scott on Spit is surf news, and it's like, who won what contest? And then what I do with Shapers is about board design. And then what I do on the show Wax On is just like long form interviews with luminaries. And what you and I are doing is a commentary about surf culture at large, regardless of who won what contest. So if JP doesn't see the value in it, then that's on JP. I don't care. I'm not pandering to the people who actually get it. But I would still be sad to lose him. Anyways, JP sent me an email, really, really long email that turned into a rant. And I had a back and forth with him that I thought had value. But a number of other people actually chimed in and they go, hey, I've been reading his commentary. When did he become angry?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that actually was kind of the most interesting detail in the whole exchange, which is I remember JP being like insightful and everything. And but there was a certain point where it became, hey, it's okay if you have a problem with what Chaz and I are talking about, but when did you like put your flag in the sand and go, I'm never going to listen to this again, and you guys are wrong. You guys are bad for talking about this.
But what if JP's right? That's what I wonder.
That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, and like the thing is, you'll never know. That's why, like, not only do I love you and enjoy these conversations, that's why I keep doing it, right? Like, because it's fun for me to do. And I hope that you have fun doing this too.
Totally.
It's fun for me to talk about this stuff. The fact that JP doesn't love it or doesn't like it at all. Sorry. Not only does
he might not even hear this because he's not going to listen after our last episode.
He hates it. But he may be right. Like, artistically, in my life, though, you never, ever, 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 ever know what you're creating, and you never know the value that it has. And the first kind of people who weigh in critically, you don't know if they're right or wrong. They may be right, they may be wrong, but you got to do something for a while in order to see if it actually has value, I think. That's where JP weighed in too quick with this is shit. It may be shit. He may be right. He just weighed in too quick.
But there's also an element that you and I have talked about where it's like, I love that he has conviction.
To me too.
Call me out.
Totally.
And I think that for every bit of feedback I've received about the podcast over the years, even if I disagree with 99% of the sentiment,
it's all helpful.
There's 1% of it that I go, ooh.
Yeah.
You know what? You're right.
Totally.
And I have a thick enough skin to where the 99% of negativity that I received out of that isn't really going to defer my direction.
No.
Like, I believe in the quality of the content enough to where, like, my heart's in the right place. I'll get to the end point,
sure,
even if I make missteps along,
sure,
the way. So 99% doesn't bother me, but that 1% that did have, you know,
you
applicability, I'll use it.
Well, that's the thing, too. How many hours are we at right now?
5 minutes after I last told you. 2 minutes and 45 minutes.
I mean, that's
2 amazing. Hours and 45
that's
minutes.
That's amazing. Do you think anybody's going to listen to this thing,
yes,
start,
yes,
to finish?
Yes. I feel beyond a shadow of a doubt that people want longer content. They've asked for it.
Okay, even so we're really at this point straight up saying, be careful what you wish for.
Yes, entirely.
Yeah.
Entirely. Do you feel like there was any slow parts in the discussion or conversation?
Are today? No, yeah. Because I enjoy talking to you.
I didn't either.
And so, but
people want to be a fly on the wall.
God bless you, people. I mean, God, honestly, God bless all of the people who listen or read anything I write.
You and I had a conversation about how long, what should we limit the length of the podcast? Yeah. I think 2 episodes ago we had that conversation. I had an email as recent as yesterday where somebody, I think it might have actually been Bruce from Austin, Texas, at the end of his email was like, oh, and by the way, keep the podcast long. Long form better.
Well, and that's what you've, like, I've been writing kind of short for, I mean, Beach Grit is all about short, you know, take anything and just put in the nut and send it out right away kind right. of thing for so long that it's fun for me to enter a new medium that I'm, like, not only unfamiliar with, but uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
And just be able to see, okay, I'm going to let the medium dictate the tone and the people will speak when they stop downloading, right?
Yeah, let's check the download numbers at the end of this and okay. see what happens. But you didn't know that it had been 2 hours and 45 minutes, right?
No, no.
It feels like it's been an
sure.
hour.
Sure, yeah. I enjoy sitting and talking yeah. and drinking.
All right, so barrel or nah, we got 3 nahs. Saying I love you is the first barrel.
Is the suit, and that's a super barrel. That's like, super that's not barrel. Even that's not even a Kelly Slater, Wave Ranch, Jerry Lopez non-barrel. That's a Jerry Lopez, G-Land, overhead, tosser.
Quadruple.
Yeah.
Through every section.
Yep, all of the sections.
All of the sections.
Yeah.
Well, there's only one appropriate way then to end this conversation.
I love you, David Lee Scales.
I love you too, Chaz. For the listeners, though, until next week, or until 2 weeks from now, until next episode, get barrel.
Yeah.
We should let this dead guy sleep. We should let this dead guy sleep.
And we love you too, the listener. I know we forgot to say it, but it's true. And, man, wasn't that fun? So much ground covered in that episode. And that's what I love about Chaz. Of course, you can find all of his work on beachgrit.com. Everything that we discussed in this episode is on surfsplendorpodcast.com, where we have a huge archive of episodes at this point. As I referenced in the episode, this style of show with Chaz is only one of the styles of show that we produce. But we have interviews, long-form interviews with luminaries, surfboard shapers, all sorts of stuff. Check it out. surfsplendorpodcast.com. Drop a couple of nickels in the donation bucket if you don't mind. This show solely exists off of the generosity of our listeners, so thanks for that. And then rate and review the show on iTunes. That's another great way to share this show with friends and help ensure its growth. And follow us on social media at Surf Splendor. We will engage in conversation with you there. All right, until next week, this is David Scales for Surf Splendor Network, reminding you, get back into the ocean, share a couple of waves, and shred on.